This week, Microsoft defines some tolerable speech and MOBAs punish intolerable cheaters. If social issues are getting to be too much, why not use your Nintendo Switch to write a program instead? These are just some of the stories we'll discuss tonight, starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio live tonight with episode number 775 for this May the 5th of 2019. My name is Rob Roberts, joining studio by the one and only Dark Soccer, Jamie Summers.
We're going to have to do something special for 777.
I know. Well, you know, there was a Bomani song, because our show is rooted in, you know, music, gaming, culture. There was a Bomani song called 777, and I think the plan was always, oh, we're just going to play that song. But now it's...
But it's holy.
And now we can't. So we might have to, like, record ourselves playing it in Guitar Freaks somehow, and then, like, play that. I don't know. I don't know what you do.
Mm.
Or we do a Vegas-themed thing. I don't know.
We make it extra sinful.
OLR.
Golden Casino
Vegas.
Night.
Right. Hello, Techmaster Loki, by the way. How are you?
Hello, I'm here.
The classic game of the week is Vegas Stakes by... who did that? Was that Hal? For Super Nintendo?
Mm.
I think it was. The people that went on to make Smash Brothers all those years later. So
that should be another character. Like, you know, one of the slot machines or
the
something.
The Vegas dude. Yeah. Or the girl that comes up to try to loan you money, or try to convince you to loan her money. And sometimes they pay you back and sometimes they run away with it.
We'll just fight the Vegas showgirl in Proteus over and over and over and over.
I hope people know what I'm talking about in that game, by the way. It was kind of a niche, like, Super Nintendo game, but I thought it was awesome. Anyway. Okay, good. I'm not alone. Looking in our chat room over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, where we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice Geeks Network, VogNetwork.com, right after the Bobby Blackwolf Show, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern. Okay, thank you. VidPower says, yay, Vegas. I think that's just because VidPower is in Vegas. The Breakman, though, says, oh, shit, I love that game. And Bobby Blackwolf says, I enjoyed Vegas Stakes. There you go. Hopefully, by the way, if you were listening to last week's show, you might have heard that we had some live audio issues going on, which, you know, c'est la vie, things are going to happen. That's why y'all turn out for a live show. And we put it out on the podcast feed, warts and all, the way that we recorded it. So we had some mic issues. So hopefully you guys are going to find that those are gone tonight, because Dark Soccer and myself have some brand new microphones. So we went out on a shopping adventure earlier this week and picked up some new microphones. They probably look different on stream as well. So, you know, the other ones that we had before, they were great. They were hand-me-downs, though, from Pod Culture, which, you know, of course, we super appreciate that. But the reality is he had already used them for some time. Then we used them for
We used them up.
I mean, gosh, we were in the apartment when we started using those. That was like 5 years ago. So I think those mics were just on their last legs, except Techmaster Loki still has the last of those microphones, because these microphones – these microphones were $100.
They were worried I'm going to break them day one.
These microphones are $100 a pop, so it was kind of one of...
To be honest, not a lot in the scope of mics.
Yeah, no, honestly, we were looking at some, you know, pretty high-end mics. So, but these, I think, are going to work for what we're going to do. And it was just one of those, all right, well, maybe we can spend $200, but $300, let's hold off. So we're going to make sure these are good. We don't have any problems. And then we'll upgrade.
Then I went lusting after other mics.
Yeah, you were looking at the fancy, like Lana Del Rey singing a sultry song into an old-fashioned radio type of mic. You're like, I want to just live stream with it.
Well, that's actually kind of what I'm thinking of doing, because Dan and I have been working on the live stream setup, but my office is an absolute wreck. And that, and I have plans to do a podcast. I'll just go ahead and say it. I have plans to do a podcast as a sister, one of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, to kind of expand the ministry and spread love and positivity in a very geeky, draggy kind of way.
Love and positivity. This is gamer culture. Fuck that.
Bitch.
Get good.
I'll show you good. I'll be so fucking good. I'm going to spread so much goddamn love. Fuck y'all. Love everybody, damn it. Stop being a shit. That's going to be what my podcast is like.
Fair enough. All right. Let's get into things that gamers need to love a little bit. Maybe. I don't know. I want to start this week's show with our kickoff topic. Before we get into our gaming weeks, I always like to bring up one topic to kind of start us off tonight. And this is one that I think a lot of people are talking about this week, right? So... the Sonic the Hedgehog movie trailer came out this week. And
it was everything we would hope that it would have been.
It got a reaction. Well, I don't know, Loki. Like, you didn't seem so bothered by it. I knew it was
going to be terrible.
Yeah.
And so all I cared about was Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey was awesome. I'm sold. I'll see it even if it's garbage. I don't care.
For those that don't know, Loki's name does not come from Loki Marvel or like some of the other uses of Loki.
It comes from Loki Mask.
Like The Mask with Jim Carrey, which is that still like your all-time favorite movie, you'd say? Or?
Oh, no.
Oh, no, I thought it was like one of your...
I mean, it's cool. I like the movie, but it's old.
When I watched the Sonic movie trailer, you know, I was kind of like, all right, this just looks like it's for kids, you know, whatever. Like, and I think a really good comparison was made on Twitter for me that, like, especially when it comes to, and I think the big thing y'all know we're going to talk about is the look of Sonic the Hedgehog, mm-hmm. right? So not everybody took too well to the look. But, you know, I think the first thing I said on Twitter was, well, you know what? It doesn't mean this movie's going to tank just because all the video gamers that grew up with Sonic are on Twitter going, what the hell did they do to Sonic? Because I'm like, you know what? Like, movies that we don't always understand why they're successful do very well. And I was like, they've made how many movies out of those Minions? Which I think those things are – I don't get it.
I haven't seen a single one and they annoy me.
Granted, yes, the Minions are annoying. But the actual story and the writing is actually pretty decent. Like, if you just have to – like, I don't know. It's all about the 60s sex – the set pieces.
Well, in a response I got, and I think this was from Flocko, I think. Sorry if I'm misappropriating that comment, but I think the reply I got, and I thought this was a better comparison, is he said he brought up the Smurfs and the Alvin and the Chipmunk movies. And I was like, oh, yeah, those Alvin and Chipmunks look terrible. But, like, they've made three of those movies, at least two, because one of them opened up against, like, a Marvel movie or something.
Right.
And those movies
But they'll keep making
well.
Them because it's just like, you know, they're probably cheap to produce and they make money. It's just like why there's really bad action movies out there too, because they're cheap to produce and they make money. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean you have to make it terribly. And I understand that, like, just because we don't like the look of Sonic doesn't mean that, well, it's okay, we're not the target demographic. No, that would be the argument that the story that they are laying out here is kind of dumb and doesn't follow the game. That would be that kind of argument, but the fact that it looks weird is a problem.
But it could be the fact that, like, okay, if all these people that had a say on the creative direction of Sonic, if all these people were saying this may not be a good idea, does that leave concerns about maybe the script isn't a good idea? I don't know. I mean, a lot of us are making snap decisions based on the trailer. Well, you know, we don't know what the movie story or anything's going to be. And I got to say, when I watched the trailer, I was like, oh, they're making another Jim Carrey movie from the 1990s. Like, and I'm like,
and I'm down with that.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm actually, that's kind of awesome. Like, I'm all for, like, Jim Carrey having
a fine with it being a terrible movie, though. Like, and let's be honest. There are some movies that, like, have, like, really good comedians in it, but they are, like, probably pretty terrible. There was one, I don't even remember, I think there was another one with Jim Carrey, actually, with penguins or something like that, that there is something to that effect. I mean, I don't think I've seen that one. And then there was one, I know, the Smurfs movies actually have Neil Patrick Harris. I'm like, I almost want to see it just because of that, but I never did see those.
Looking in chat, DJ Rama S says this movie may not be targeted at us, but for God's sake, Sonic should look damn near like his anime and gaming counterpart.
Well, why not, though? Why not try to make it appeal to as many people as possible? That's just an excuse of saying, well, I'm sorry, we just didn't try that hard because we're aiming at kids and kids don't give a shit. You know, that's a terrible argument. That's just like, well, we wanted to pay the right, you know, that'd be like, imagine a Mario movie. Okay, we can imagine a Mario movie that came out. Imagine a Mario movie outside of the 90s that came out where they're just like, we don't fucking care because it's for kids, you know, and they just half-assed it.
I will say this. There was a Super Mario Brothers anime that came out that was so freaking weird. Dan and I sat and watched it and was like, why does this, it had like nothing to do with any of the current canon. It was also weird, like having to rescue Peach's like boyfriend or something and weirdness. But weird Mario has been done before.
And there is a Mario movie coming out, a new one.
Is what, there?
Yeah.
By Illumination.
By the Despicable Me people.
I gotta, seriously, I know
only
you
if
hate,
they have Charles Martinet.
You need to seriously sit down and watch those movies. They're not that bad. They're actually pretty entertaining to watch. So like I have no problem with them doing a Mario movie. I think they'd be a great studio to do a Mario movie because like anything Illumination has done has actually been pretty good. Even like Dogs, what was it? Life of Pets or something like that. That's actually a pretty decent movie.
Well, let me bring it back, because I think many of you, I'm sure many of you that bother to watch a Twitch gaming show probably keep some sort of pulse on the gaming news and so forth that's going out there on Twitter and so forth. So I think you all know kind of the punchline that ends this is that because of all of that kind of negative reception that ended up happening on social media, on Twitter and Facebook and everything, and just the memes, the redoing of Sonic and so forth, the director of the movie, Jeff Fowler, who is Fowltown on Twitter, I actually think that's kind of a funny Twitter handle, Fowltown, over on Twitter, said, "Thank you for the support and the criticism. The message is loud and clear. You aren't happy with the design and you want changes. It's going to happen. Everyone at Paramount and Sega are fully committed to making this character the best he can be. Hashtag Sonic movie. Hashtag gotta fix fast." Which I thought was funny. Now, I do want to say, every other article you've seen about they have to go back and redo this before the release date, they have so much, they're doing that. This 280 character tweet is what's been said on the subject. Every other story, every other click article you saw on Facebook, every other thing you read about how they have to go back and fix the Sonic movie, I'm using my little quotey fingers, every single one of those articles is based on this 200-character tweet. So, I mean, we can sit here and read between the lines too, but we don't know yet if this means release date pushback. We're assuming no. We don't know if this means, ironically, following up on crunch time after last week's show, if this means it's going to be crunch time for animators and so forth. I hope not.
It would be crunch time for rendering is what I would think. But they can still film their principal photography stuff and then add it in later.
Principal photography has been done since like the end of 2008. So they're not
2008?
I'm sorry, 2018. I'm sorry.
That's why we're getting the 90s, Jim Carrey. They filmed it in the 90s.
They actually filmed it in the 90s.
And it's authentic.
Yeah, it's authentic. You know what I meant? I'm sorry.
We couldn't realize Sonic until the technology was there.
Damn it. They filmed it last year. Anyway.
We made dinosaurs come to life, but Sonic the Hedgehog was an additional challenge.
Fuck off. All right. Y'all know what I meant. Anyway, so, I mean, the thing is, principal photography's done. James Marsden, Jim Carrey, they've all moved on to other things. I don't know what, but they've moved on to these other things. So I don't think, I mean, it is customary to maybe do reshoots here and there, but at the same time, if they're fixing this rendering character that was not part of the principal photography now anyway, I mean, it doesn't seem like they need to actually do reshoots, but I'm not a Hollywood magician.
But, like, who likes, I want to know who okayed this. Who said, yeah, that's good. I mean, like, who, no one's like, that doesn't really look like it should. Something's wrong.
Focus groups. I know you're gonna look at me and make fun of me because I'm saying that.
No. I understand.
I'm just answering the question that's presented. Who told them they could do that? Focus groups did. I'm not saying these focus groups knew dick about Sonic the Hedgehog or anything. But to be fair, in Hollywood, they're not necessarily wanting to just attract gamers. They want to build something that they can get all sorts of families on and that they can sell toys. At the end of the day, but it isn't even about selling video games, it's about selling toys.
But why would making Sonic look more like the character from the game detract from Sonic? See, that's what I don't understand. It's like, why making it look accurate would detract from people wanting to see the movie? That's never been an argument. Sorry, this was better, so that's why it did work. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Here's the thing. Like, I'm not gonna like disagree that he looks bad. He doesn't look great, but I'm not sure what fixing him at this point is gonna do. Like, if the movie is bad, you guys, it's gonna be bad no matter what Sonic
I want it to
like.
Be if it's gonna be bad, I want it to be really bad. Like, because I think Sonic as it is now, if we just kept everything as it is now, we have the potential to be like so bad it's good type category. Like, I kind of want to go there, but now it's gonna be like better and stuff, and I guess that's fine. But
Tiger Claw in chat says, actually, an article on IGN back in December, the producer Tim Miller did say that Sega was not happy with the eyes, but they went with what we saw because they didn't want Sonic to look like a Pixar character. Bobby Blackwell followed that up in our chat saying the focus groups probably weren't given the game as a reference. Yeah, I also would like to know why was it such a big deal that it doesn't look
like
a Pixar character.
Damn, we don't want our animation to look like this really, this highly esteemed animation company. God forbid we make it look good.
I think there's a fear looking forward that then all the reviews would say that it's a Pixar knockoff or something, which I'm not, again, Loki, I'm just answering the question that you put out there. I'm not saying I necessarily agree with these things, But that's probably why they did that. And but I think we all sit here and know. But everybody knows Sonic the Hedgehog goes back before. Was Pixar a thing in 91? When was the first Toy Story movie? 94? So Sonic the Hedgehog predates, we'll say, Pixar's legacy, if nothing else. We know that. Sonic predates Pixar's
legacy. It sounds like they just half-assed. I don't know.
Okay, here's the other.
I am sure someone worked really hard on it, but yeah.
Here's other kind of just interesting things I want to put out there about this whole debacle. One of them is the fact that, you know, whether the news be good or whether the news be bad, I am hearing more about this movie than any other movie that's coming out this year.
Oh, that's because Detective Pikachu comes out this week, and I'm sure it'll be just all amazing that
is. Like, somebody was trying to tell me, like, what movies were opening the same weekend as Sonic, and they were like, oh, there's a sequel to The Shining coming out, there's some new Emmerich movie. And I'm like, they're making, who's making a sequel to The Shining and why? And the second, like, I'm just like, I'm not hearing about any of these other movies. And I know, you know, but nothing that's being said is any good. Since when was bad publicity bad publicity?
Now a Roland Emmerich Sonic movie, I'm down with that.
I was going to say, a Roland Emmerich movie, I'm like, you want to talk about a movie we know is going to be bad? Come on. What Roland Emmerich movies are like Independence Day, The Day After Tomorrow when they're running from temperature.
Okay.
Is that
Independence Day was good. Everything after Day was bad.
Independence Day is a perfect example. A perfect example of a movie that's bad to the level that it's good.
Yes. Yes. There was a lot of like hold your disbelief type things. Like,
hold on to your butts. No, wait, that was Jurassic Park. But another movie that's kind of bad, but it's good.
Oh, no, it's gone. Yeah, Jurassic Park has gone that way too. But yeah, I mean, I remember I didn't watch the last one that he did, but I watched 2012. And like, there's only so many times that a plane can take off from a runway when the earthquake is destroying the runway. It happened three fucking times in the movie. Three times.
I kind of agree. Whereas I'm appreciative that this director seems to be wanting to listen to the feedback and all that stuff. I kind of want to see what the Emmerich Sonic movie would look like. A character that can literally outrun temperature, I think, would be pretty amazing. All right. But anyway, let's talk about that fan backlash a little bit, because I'm also trying to sit here and think of a time I'm sure, and maybe chatters know, because I can't think of any, a time that a trailer was so poorly received that they went back and are changing the movie because of it. This is kind of a big deal.
I'm not sure about trailer, but I know like several movies had like major reshoots, like and never ended up working out too well either. Like the Wolverine movie, the original Wolverine movie.
Oh, good old test audiences seeing the original ending of things. Yeah,
Little Shop of Horrors.
Ah, sure.
Because they had the original Plants Win ending with the Don't Feed the Plants that was in the stage play, and they went back and it tested so poorly that they went back and did a happy ending.
But it's interesting that this is something that has become more and more prevalent in gamer culture. Like, I know we're spending a lot of time talking about a movie that just happens to be based on a game, but let's be real. Fan backlashes, this is like the new norm in gaming culture. And I'm not completely sure how I feel about it. Obviously, the most well-known circumstance of this would be Mass Effect 3's original ending. And Jamie, I know that's a game near and dear to your heart as well.
I liked the new endings.
It's interesting because there's a part of me that's like, let the art just be the art and let it be. And when I saw the original endings, because I did beat the game originally before the extended endings, I was like, it's not that bad. I understand why people were irritated because they felt that the decisions they made were not really reflected in the ending. But at the time, I was kind of sitting there going, well, I feel like there's only so much you could do with it. So like, you can't wrap up every single story. Like, there's just so many branching paths at this point. Like, I don't know how else you would wrap it up besides an ending that, spoiler alert for a video game that's very old at this point, either destroys the entire universe or, you know, synthesizes, or you know the various endings at the end of Mass Effect 3. So it's interesting they went back and did it, but I'm kind of with you, Jamie. After seeing what they did with those remade endings, I was like, oh well, that I like what they did with that. I think these are even more impactful now. I know a lot of the hardcore fans hate the synthesis ending because of you know, the unwillingness of merging the technology. However, you can hate that ending all you want. I would still argue it's very well done. Like, just with Trisha Helfer's narration is amazing in that ending.
I thought it was well done. It's just not the choice that I make.
Sure, sure. You know? Allowed to have your head canon. That's part of the fun of Mass Effect, right?
Honestly, the only one I choose is the one that has a chance of having my femship back.
Yeah. So anyway, but like, but I remember at the time that all happened, I was like, you know, the creators of Final Fantasy VII should be so happy there that the internet did not exist in its same. I mean, the internet was there, but it was very dial up and like Prodigy, AOL. Like, it wasn't as prevalent, like in your pocket on your mobile phone as it is today. Like, the creators of Final Fantasy VII should be so happy that people were not able to make a fuss like they were back then, which has me so curious how they're going to do this remake. Because I don't know if you guys all remember, but the ending to Final Fantasy VII is not great. Like, it's not great, especially considering like all the effort you put into that game and everything. Like, the ending, the payoff. I mean, the story in that game doesn't make the most sense as it is. And the ending just kind of like further complicates that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. Do you think there'll be a DLC remake or something? I don't know. A DLC ending? Anyway, going to chat for some more comments. Kaijudo says, like I said, gamers don't know what they want. They have to stop bending to everything gamers complain about and just think outside the box and create. SSJ 100 Matt talking about reshoots, saying Back to the Future had to reshoot most of the movie.
Because of Jason Bateman, wasn't it?
It
wasn't Jason Bateman. It was
somebody else. I don't remember.
I thought it was.
It wasn't Jason Bateman.
No, it was. But it was someone along those lines. Like, yeah, one
was,
of those.
It was another like 80s teen guy. But yeah, the original audiences didn't respond well. I thought they replaced him. I didn't think they shot like the whole movie. Like, they'd done some significant shooting, but they hadn't shot the whole movie.
Which movie?
Back to the Future.
Eric Stoltz.
That's it.
It was Eric Stoltz.
That was it. Eric Stoltz.
Because I kept seeing the movie he was in with Cher in my head, and I was like, I know who it is.
And Bobby clarifies it was 2 weeks, not the whole movie, but it's still a pretty significant amount of time. Very infamously, Star Trek Voyager. Shot without Catherine Janeway, without Kate Mulgrew. Well, actually, the character's original name, I think, was Nicole. I think even the captain had a different name. I think it was Nicole Janeway, and it was that French actress, Genevieve Bujold.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see some of her scenes on the Blu-ray, because I've seen it, and she's not great. Like, you could kind of tell she didn't really want to be there. So, I mean, it kind of worked out because Kate Mulgrew is, like, legendary in that role. But that's a little different because audiences, I don't think, had as much to do with that as maybe this is a circumstance where Hollywood and producers and things like that kind of sat in the boardroom and looked at it and made the right call. Like, when they looked at that footage, they said, she is not right for this part. And, you know, got the person that they had second in mind, Columbo's wife, which ended up being, you know, an epic Star Trek captain. So, some other just quick reshoot things you may or may not have known about. Bobby Blackwolf pointing out The Matrix Reloaded had to reshoot after Aaliyah died. That's right. Aaliyah was the role that was played by what's his name's daughter ended up doing it.
It was Jada Smith.
No, it wasn't that role. It was somebody else. It was somebody famous's daughter that ended up doing it. You know The Matrix better. Who was Aaliyah originally supposed to play in The Matrix Reloaded? It was not Jada Pinkett's character. It was somebody else.
Was it Trinity?
No, it wasn't Trinity.
No?
No, because it was specifically in Reloaded. But anyway.
I don't remember.
No, Queen of the Damned was actually released. It was Z. Z was the character that in the game. Or in the movie.
I don't remember.
Jada was more. The interesting thing about Jada Pinkett's role is that it was really the star of the. She was the star of the game. And they kind of incorporated that into the movie. Right? Because the game had Jada Pinkett and that other character.
No, it wasn't her. It was it wasn't her as the main character in the game. I don't think.
She was like the main character in the game.
No, it was. I remember it was. Maybe it was.
Nona Gay. It was Marvin Gaye's daughter. So or granddaughter, maybe. So, anyway.
I'm trying to remember who the characters were that were in
the game.
Thank you, Bobby,
for getting the Wikipedia article faster than I could.
I don't remember. I played a lot of it, though.
Let's see. There was another good reshoot comment here. Oh, Bobby also pointing out about reshoots after the trailer. World War Z had some reshoots after the trailer. SG100 Matt saying, didn't Passion of the Christ get toned down after the fact?
Oh, it was Niobe. Okay. I forgot that she was one of the main characters in that.
So with the Passion of the Christ, that was an interesting one too, because, you know, that movie was very violent, but it was very religious.
Very anti-Semitic.
I'm going to keep it to just the information.
The trailer is full of spoilers.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sorry, the book was better.
But here's the thing is that because of the fact that there was many religious people interested in seeing the movie who had concerns about the violence, they released a PG-13 version of the movie, which is not the first time they've done that. Sometimes our movies get a PG-13 version exactly for that reason, to try to expand who can kind of go see it.
Wasn't the original cut of Deadpool supposed to be raunchier?
Deadpool 2, the recent one, had that holiday version that was PG-13.
Yeah.
So that's the most recent example of that.
But there was also, I want to say that Aliens had to be toned down a bit too. Or how about this for Kill Bill Volume 1? In Japan, the big fight scene in the House of Blue Leaves was in color and longer. And they made it black and white for the U.S. one, even though it's like piles of fake blood, but for some censorship thing to lower the rating. I have the DVD of the Japanese one, and honestly, the fight's a lot better in color.
I think the anime sequence was altered somehow, too.
I don't remember it being. I'd have to watch the two of them again, but
I don't even think it was in the Japanese version. I think it was something Tarantino commented on, I'm irritated. He's kind of come out and said he's not going to end up doing a volume 3 or 4.
Which is sad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Anyway, we got off track a little bit because I really wanted to talk about fan backlashes. But let me ask this question. Let me wrap on this question, then we'll move on to our gaming weeks, because I know we've talked about this for a little bit, kind of going down memory lane a little bit. Do you think this fan backlash to Sonic is a good trend or a bad trend? Because I want to watch how I'm wording this, because I don't want you guys to answer the question about what it means for Sonic. I want you guys to answer the question, is it a good precedent that Hollywood is now willing to change somebody's artistic vision based on the feedback?
It's ultimately up to whoever's making the content to make that decision whether they want to change it or not. I don't think it's a bad trend that people are letting them know what their opinions are. That's why we have social media. They want to act on it, they can act on it. That's independent from the people criticizing it. I don't think under any... we should not expect them to change it just because we complain about it, but that they're going to do it, that's cool. I mean, that's in their best interest because that's going to get more people interested in it, but that's ultimately their call, and I don't think they should blame the backlash on it. Maybe consider, you know, when you're putting out the trailer, make sure that you're showing your best work. You know, and to be fair, you know, that's not to say that this isn't their fault that they're not showing their best work, but like there's been several times where I think it's Sony Pictures or maybe Universal or something sends out trailers without like music in them. Sometimes they fuck up in that sense where like, dude, I can't believe you did that once, and then I can't believe you did that a second time. But yeah, I mean, you're marketing a product. You got to make sure that if something looks weird, people are going to call you out on it.
I'm going to comments from chat. Bobby Blackwolf, bad trend. I said the same thing about Mass Effect 3's ending. Kaijudo, bad trend, 100%. Bonds 006, I don't want the retooling. I don't want it to be a trend. Tiger Claw says, they're not going to completely change Sonic. Mark my word, they have a plan B. Believe it or not, you guys, mark the date and time. I kind of agree with Tiger Claw here. No tea, no shade. But here's the thing is that I don't know so much about the plan B. I don't think they already have rendered footage that exists as something else. They probably have concept art. Sure, they have a lot of concepts. But here's the thing. I think the part of his comment where he says they're not going to change it as much as y'all think they are, I agree with that 100%. I don't think it's going to be this drastic retooling of Sonic. Maybe they'll take his teeth out.
One thing to consider is that the animation has been done. All they have to do is reskin the frame. That's all they have to do. You know, maybe tweak animation like on the eyes or something if they do give him the more, you know, game style visage, you know. But the animation is done. The frames are done. There's not going to be a whole lot of tweaking people have to do other than a reskin pretty much. So it's not going to be that thing. But the other thing, too, is that however it's going to take, they shouldn't rush it. They really need to take their time and do it right.
I do agree with that. I think I'm kind of like havesies with you, because I think when it comes to like maybe the clips of him running or the clips of like, I don't think those are necessarily going to need to be changed a lot. But I think because of that, there's a certain structure to Sonic that is just going to have to stay the same. Like, maybe they can change some of the stuff when he's there talking and they're doing some close-up shots and things like that. But I just think there's, like, because I don't think they're going to have time to go back and do all the, you know, chase sequences or whatever. I think there's a certain frame of his they're going to have to stick with. It's too far gone.
They
now.
Need to make it worse. I want to, like, make him even taller, his legs even, like, wider, or like, skinnier or whatever. Just make it worse. I want it to be worse.
SSU and Under Matt says, it's a new Coke scheme. Tweak it a little bit and come off like they care about the original subject matter. Now here's the question. Will the Blu-ray have the original Sonic scenes?
I want to be able to flip between the two.
All right, look. I've spent enough time talking about that movie. Like I said, I can't think of any other movie. Now that Avengers is coming gone and Captain Marvel's coming gone, I can't think of any other movie this year that's getting as much talk right now. So there's that. Even Detective Pikachu. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of talk about that, and it sounds like
it's going to be great.
Some of the early reviews are saying it doesn't suck. Like, I'm not seeing 5 stars, but I'm seeing, as far as video game movies go, not bad.
I'm seeing it on Saturday.
I want to see it, too, for sure. I definitely want to go see Detective Pikachu. But I'll probably go see the Sonic movie, too. Why not?
I'm seeing that for sure. Absolutely.
Honestly, I just want to see the Jim Carrey 90s stuff and, oh, it's about Sonic the Hedgehog.
I fully support that movie. And if you don't believe me, go look at my Twitter.
All right. Anyway, moving on. Let's get into our gaming weeks and the types of games we have been playing this week. Maybe somebody's been playing Sonic the Hedgehog in memory. I don't know. Dark Sakura, we'll start with you. How was your gaming week?
It was uneventful. I've had a very, very busy week. I'm playing lots of Animal Crossing. I got the DJKK booth, and that makes me really happy. I'm still playing Idle Pouring. I kind of don't know if I want to keep playing it, just because, I don't know, I'm not getting any further in the game, and I'm just kind of bored with it. Right now, I'm playing it out of this weird sense of obligation. I've been playing Ingress a little bit, just trying to gather equipment for the event. I don't know if I said it last week. I don't know if we had it by then, but we have a Doctor Who pinball now.
You did mention, yeah, last week.
And on camera, if you look in a minute, I'm going to put up one of the plastics that Dan gave me. Of a Dalek. It's a broken one, but it hangs out in my purse now so I can put it in my cube at work. But I've been playing actually quite a bit more of that because it has one of the best multi-balls ever. But, I mean, really not a whole lot. It's been kind of a work week for me, so it's been mostly doing, like, web design stuff. So that's it.
Fair enough. Loki, how about you? How was your gaming week?
I didn't play a lot of games this week. I played mainly just Pokemon Go. I've been really bad. I've not played my DDR cabinet in a while. I'm hoping to change that this week. It's just been, I've been busy with work stuff. So I've actually been doing work at home on top of work at work. So, yeah, that's my excuse. This week, though, my wife has gone the entire week out of on business and stuff. So that means I can stream video games. And so I have to figure out what I'm going to do, but maybe we'll do some of that this week. And then I did work on my game a bit more as well, and making very small progress on that. And then I also, because I've been waiting to get something for my PC for a while now, so I finally decided to purchase an Oculus Rift S. So I have that pre-ordered now.
So you got in on that, because I heard that's all, like, Bobby went into a little more in depth on his show tonight about that, which is funny because I think we had so many news stories to talk about. I don't think I actually put it on our show roll. We can talk about it now. That was announced and sold out like that. So, and you're one of them.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they sold out. I just know that they're shipping by the end of the month is what it says, and that's fine, whatever. I wanted it just because I didn't want to have, like, And like, there's, I was going back and forth between that and the Vive, you know, what I wanted. I stuck with the S just because it has that inside out tracking. So I don't need to set up all the base stations for that. It's just headset and two controllers, and then that's it. That's all you really need to get going. I like how they have it where you can kind of define your room area a little bit. Plus, they have the pass-through camera on there, so you can see, like, if you need to, you know, if your kids come up and start asking you questions, you can flip it over and actually see them type stuff through the camera, which is kind of cool. So I'm looking for that. I know that people have been harping on it because they dropped down the frame rate in it from 90 hertz to 80 hertz, which, from what I hear from early reviews, is it could be seen two ways. One, it's not a big deal, or two, oh my God, it's a terrible big deal. You know, you should get this one that, you know, the $1,000 headset that has 120 hertz. You know what? I'm not spending $1,000 on a goddamn, you know, VR headset. I'll spend the same amount of money that I was going to spend on an actual Oculus Rift and get the better Oculus Rift. And I'm just fine with that because I don't know if this laptop can push, you know, the 120 hertz and, you know, the higher resolution without melting itself. So I'll be fine with just that. And besides, I'm not going to exactly use it for anything super important other than playing like Mosh Pit Simulator and really dumb VR shit. So that's all I'm looking forward to.
Bring it to the show because I want to check that out.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I'm fortunate enough where I'm sure Bobby will bring the latest and greatest VR to Dragon Con, but I still want to see it when you get it.
Yeah, I mean, and I would be down if I had like a dedicated space to do gaming. I would be down with something more elaborate where I actually have to set up those base stations and stuff. But I don't have that kind of space. So I'm fine with, you know, something where I can go out into the living room, draw my little box that I'm going to play in, and just play without having to, you know, set up a bunch of stuff and mount stuff to the wall and that kind of crap. So I'm looking forward to that coming in at some point. And yeah, I don't know.
All right, cool.
So that's it.
All right, the My Gaming Week. I'll start with VR. I'll piggyback off you guys. So VR, I've been playing a lot of Beat Saber, still on PlayStation 4. PlayStation's the only VR I have right now, but it suits my needs for what I want to play. So Beat Saber is great. I find that it's just really good exercise. So, like, on days where I haven't really been able to get to the gym just because, like, especially Sundays are bad because, like, we went to brunch earlier and I have to prep for OLR. So I'm like, and the gym is, like, 20 minutes away. So it's like I kind of have to, you know, stay here. So Beat Saber's great for just kind of, like, getting moving and burning some calories and all that. And I just love
– Do they have, like,
game.
A calorie tracker type thing in there?
I have my watch.
Oh,
my
yeah.
Watch
I guess
all that stuff.
Too.
So, yeah. So I could just feel it. You know, you can just kind of feel it, how worn out you are after playing. Because I play a lot of stuff on the hard. I've been kind of toning back on Expert a little bit just because I keep failing on Expert. So I'm like, all right, let me go through and, like, do everything on hard, you know, and get some trophies that way, which I've been getting more trophies on PS4 and stuff. And then I'll go back and do the Expert. Because, you know, again, PlayStation 4 is not modded, so I only have, like, the official sanctioned songs. But with that official pack, there's that additional Monster Cat. Sorry, I forget the name of the label. But they have that DLC pack that was, like, 10 more songs.
Oh,
so
like Monster Cat, yeah.
Yeah, there is that. And I think there's a second pack of those that's supposed to be coming at some point. So, yeah, I have enough to play in that game, and I've been having a good time. And then piggybacking on something that Jamie talked about, I also have been playing a little bit of Ingress and Pokemon Go. For the two of you out there that play Ingress, I'm trying to get back to level 12 post-recursion before the anomaly in Chicago because I got that event in 3 weeks.
I did play a little bit of Ingress too, but it was because my son does the programming class at this like place, Code Ninjas, and they're like, so do you know how we would submit to become a Pokestop? I'm like, well, you got to do it through Ingress. So I submitted their location as an Ingress portal.
Well, that's nice of you.
So I was like, yeah, why not? You know,
why not?
I've seen, you know, the rabbit over at the gymnastics place be a Pokestop. So I'm like, or, you know, Ingress portal Pokestop. I'm like, well, if that can be one, then I don't see why this couldn't be one.
Yeah, it's a place of education and all that. So, yeah, no, it would meet the criteria. Okay. You just have to hope it's, you know, not in a area where the other players are going to be like, I don't want that team to have a portal there. Because
people do dumb. Shouldn't really.
Just do what I do. And if it doesn't make it through the first time, just keep submitting it until it goes through. It'll go through eventually. It's ridiculous, but it works. let's see. What else? I've been playing Pokemon Go as well. I haven't done the new raid yet, though, which I think is coming up later in the show. So I probably shouldn't spoil it too much. But I have not done the new raid yet. I need to do that. And then, as far as like other stuff, been playing some Final Fantasy 14, and continuing to try to get the max level gear. I even did a stream this week on my personal stream, which I haven't done in a long time, so I did that. And still playing a little Borderlands here and there. So I'm keeping myself pretty busy, but haven't really explored a lot of new games for me right now. Just kind of relying on my old favorites for the moment. So, all right. Well, we're going to move on. Speaking of not being here in events and things like that, I just want to remind you guys, we will not be here in 3 weeks. That's Memorial Day weekend. We're not going to have a show live, but I hope you guys will have a fun weekend. I'm not sure if Bobby's here that weekend or not. I'll have to see in chat. But I am going to be off in Chicago. I'm doing an Ingress thing there, and I have a lot of friends in Chicago, so it's kind of like, you know, the Ingress thing is a convenient excuse to do while I'm there. And
you said Memorial Day weekend?
It's Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
So, and then Dark Sakura is at DragCon, which...
And, oh God, it's going to be busy, because not only am I going to DragCon, I'm going to San Diego the day after.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
To see a couple... If I had time for it, I'd go even further south and see Act Deft, but I don't have a passport either.
Oh, yeah. You kind of need one of those. Yeah.
I'm going to San Diego for one day, and then Tuesday I'm going to Disneyland. I'm just probably not going to do the Harry Potter thing unless I hate myself and want to drive back on Friday and go to work Saturday. Yeah, I would be full of self-hatred.
Yeah, that'd be a lot.
I'm planning on, as it is, I'm driving back up by myself.
That sounds like it's going to be an action-packed trip, so that'll be fun.
It is. It'll be a lot of fun, but I'm going to be way exhausted. I was super exhausted after Easter. But I will see so many sisters and drag queens, and if you are in that area and want to have lunch or something, we'll go to Roscoe's.
Hit me up on Twitter.
Yes.
I suppose the same could be said for Chicago, but I don't know if I'll do any arcadey things while I'm there.
Just bring me back chocolate.
Yeah. I might get out to Replay or something again.
I can get those bars now, by the way, but those bonbons, holy shit.
Right. Let's get into some gaming news and talk about what's been going on. In the world of gaming this week, there's still a lot of news to cover. Loki, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, so this is kind of cool. There was this game, A Dark Room, that basically is like this text-based role-playing game. And the guy that made it, Amir Rajan, he put that after... Well, the game was released a couple weeks ago. Put that if you connect a USB keyboard to it and hit the title key, it'll actually open up a code editor.
You mean the tilde?
Tilde, yeah.
It's a title, like it's a music streaming service.
Sorry, yeah, tilde.
Yes.
And it'll actually open up a Ruby programming language interpreter and code editor that he put in hid in the game. Which, you know, the whole point was, you know, he basically put it that he liked coding and he wanted to create games. You know, back in the 90s, it wasn't, it was difficult to do that. But now, you know, being that it's, you know, more modern, it's easier for people to get into that. And he wanted, you know, kids to kind of get into that as well and tinker around. Of course, Nintendo did not agree with that. And they decided to pull the game off the shop because, you know, code editor, running your own code. Oh, my God, hacks. So that's unfortunate for him that you're not going to be able to do that. I don't know if I don't think they released a physical version of this, but
I don't think they did. And the bummer is this is such a huge infraction. It's probably going to make him persona non grata with Nintendo. Like, I don't know if he was going to be able to get his game back or any other game. Like, that's a pretty big deal. But help me understand the coding that you could do. Could you really mess with your Switch with it? Or like,
I don't think so. I think it's just like kind of like a basic editor type thing. I don't know. Someone's going to find a way around it.
Mario Maker is kind of coding. Like, there. I mean, my thing is, like, you can make games in other games. Like, I guess my brain goes to, like, a Little Big Planet. But I guess there's nothing on the Switch that allows you to, like, freely type things. Or, you know, maybe they're worried that the door is left open too much on that.
Yeah, he said basically, you know, the code editors, all it can do is draw lines, squares, labels, play sounds from the game, and detect button presses. It says you can't even render an image with the damn thing. But, you know, yes, if your app is composed completely of labels, squares, and lines, then it lets you build an app without having to perform any hacks.
Are you able to draw a penis out of dashes and lines?
Yes.
Well, that's Nintendo's problem. We cannot have ASCII penis on our system. That is foreboding. So there it is. Heaven forbid some of those stages in Super Smash, let me tell you. But heaven forbid somebody be allowed to program their own wiener in
But yeah, basically the problem is that he cheated their approval process, and so that's why they didn't like that. Well, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, that's I mean, you have to disclose everything that's in there, even if you have like that, and that's really the biggest infraction because like, for example, you can't this has actually happened to Oblivion, Elder Scrolls Oblivion. They submitted their game for a rating, and you have to disclose everything that's in the game, and they got their rating. But then come to find out the PC version could be hacked so that you could find, OMG, a bear titty on the actual CD. The actual texture was a bear titty. And because they didn't disclose that when they, you know, went for their rating, the game got an adults only rating. Was it titty or was it like, was it the Southern Hemisphere? Was that the problem?
Which game?
Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Remember how it got re-rated AO because of textures that were found on the original CD? Okay, fuck it.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto, hot coffee mod. There's another great example. Hot coffee was not accessible without some type of like Game Genie-esque sort of code or altercation. But because hot coffee existed on that disc, it got Grand Theft Auto that AO rating. Y'all know that one. That was a big deal.
Well, if you're wanting to mess with that Ruby interpreter, he does have it available to mess around with for free. So go to dragonruby.itch.io and you can check it out.
Interesting that in spite of all that, he's still kind of like putting it out there for free. That seems bold, we'll say.
That seems like what Weird Al did with the You're Pitiful song.
I'm sorry, actually they have the toolkit's actually $40, but they have like you can actually purchase it if you wanted to. And
that was the Gaga thing too, wasn't it?
No, he didn't do that. One of Gaga's representatives said that she wanted to see hear the whole song first, and then she's like, no, I'm fine with it. You can do it. It was the recording company for James Blunt.
Oh, yeah. Whatever happened to him, by the way?
Mm.
Yeah, right?
Still can't sing.
So, anyway. Bobby's got a whole article on the Wikipedias about this. Here's the Oblivion thing. So, Bobby copy-pasted in chat. What Bethesda had originally disclosed to us is an example. In that section of the game, there's a hanging corpse. What they disclosed to us was a hanging corpse in the dark, pretty far away and without much detail. And yet, when you bring a torch up to the hanging corpse in the actual game, you can see that it's very mutilated with lots of blood and bones. That was a very different depiction, far more intense, far more extreme than what had been disclosed to us. So, I mean, the disclosure is important. So whether Nintendo is afraid of ASCII dicks in this editor or not, whatever that issue is, the problem really is that this is a pretty full-fledged feature that he put in this game and intentionally made it difficult to access that people wouldn't find it, and then was like, you know, it was a problem. He didn't disclose it. And if he had disclosed it, maybe Nintendo could have reviewed it and seen it's not that big a deal. You can't run homebrew on it, and maybe would have let it stay. Who knows? So I kind of doubt they would have let it stay. But we like to think that way, right? We like to think Nintendo's going to be a little more proactive like that. Who knows? Anyway, let's move on. And let's talk about Platinum Games. Y'all like Platinum Games, right? Platinum Games is set to start self-publishing. Platinum is going to be self-publishing their games, such as, well, we don't know exactly what games yet, but we know some examples of games that were kind of one and done were things like The Wonderful 101 and Vanquish. And because Platinum doesn't really publish these themselves, they can't really control if a sequel is going to happen or not. And I'm sure most people, when they think of Platinum and sequels and that whole thing, they think about Bayonetta. And so there was an interview recently with Video Games Chronicle where Atsushi Inaba, who's the head of Platinum, said that they want to self-publish their games because, quote, what it means is we have a lot of different choices in the way that we want to make games. It's that simple, and quite frankly, in the case of Bayonetta, it took a lot of time and energy to get it to the point where sequels could be made. It wasn't as simple as picking up the phone and asking, hey, can we do this? There were lots of pieces that needed to fall into place and a lot of negotiating that had to occur. It's absolutely the truth that there are cases where you want to do a sequel, but if you don't own the IP, you can't do it. Platinum also has two unannounced games in development, so we don't know if there's any possible sequels are there. Well, I guess not, because the IP, they're not, they can't bring back something like Wonderful 101. So they're going to be new IPs most likely, and things that are owned by
Marvelous
the
102.
They're saying we're in the middle of designing the continued quote here from the studio head. We're in the middle of designing something that has never been done before. I know a lot of people say that, but the game we're working on is truly unlike anything else. This is something that has never been designed before. So from a game design perspective, we're very excited right now. Big words about the whole never seen this before. It'd be interesting to see if it's really true. I would also like to know if they were able to do something with Scalebound. Like, did they maybe, like, change things around in the game so it doesn't look like the project that Microsoft funded, and maybe that's something they're going to put out after all? Who knows? Who knows?
You see, this game that we've never attempted before, it's like Bayonetta. But instead of putting guns on her hands and on her feet, this dude is going to have a gun out of his ass.
Why not? Why not? Let's do it.
We're going to call it Wrecked Gun.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you're not a game designer. But
oh darn.
Bayonetta 3 is still a thing. Hey, remember? Bayonetta 3 got announced a couple years ago. And
did
that
it?
Was the last we heard. Yes! Bayonetta, yeah, remember? Hello, remember Bayonetta 3 is a thing that's happening. And that's all we know. It was a very quick announcement trailer. I'm hoping...
Well, you can't announce things like 4 years, like several years ago, and then just like all of a sudden...
Yeah, you can.
I guess you can, yeah.
I'm hoping...
Everybody does it, I guess.
I'm just... You know, E3 is what? Like the week... Like, here's the thing. So we're gone Memorial Day weekend. I think that week we get back is the night that Bethesda interrupts our show with their press conference, because E3's like underway. So... I mean, E3's just around the corner, so I'm super curious if Bayonetta 3...
I should just stay in L.A.
...isn't going to show up. I know, right? You should just go to E3.
No, I can't.
I know.
I'm sorry, but I would rather be at work than go to E3.
E3 is work, in some ways, depending on
no,
who you represent.
I'm going to be around so many people for a convention I'm actually interested in, so... I'll let...
There's a little salt around here when it comes to E3. No, it's...
No, let them jerk each other off. I don't care. Let them show their game dicks and let everyone else compare them. I'll just wait for it to come out from the comfort of my own home. They don't give out good swag anymore.
They should just put that on the poster for E3. Let them jerk each other off, Dark Sakura.
That's not on the approved Microsoft list, unfortunately.
As long as they've got some good dick jiggle physics, I mean, that's really all people want.
Listen, get sexual threat.
Can you save that for later in the show? Excuse me.
Oh, no, we got to.
Are you
we're
all
building
paying attention?
To.
We have a list. Everything is very, it's up on the screen, even though I haven't been totally right with it. It's a list, and I don't see, do you see the Microsoft thing up there yet?
That's no. Me flipping off the list. Sorry, right. Loki.
No, you get to. You better get to the next
my
item
very
on the list.
Delicate.
The next item on the list is yours.
Yeah, whatever. Rocket League. Who likes Rocket League in this room?
I think it's cool.
Okay.
I wish I had more time to play more of it.
Well, their developer, Psyonix, is, quote, joining the Epic Games family. So Epic Games ruined something else.
Not yet. No.
Well,
not yet.
They're planning to ruin it.
The ruination is happening. It's going to be closing in late May or early June. They've released an FAQ about this, but they wanted to. I guess they're just acquiring it because Rocket League is good. I mean, maybe I don't know. They just like ruining
things
for people.
Rocket League's pretty good. It's an interesting title because Rocket League has esports conventions like. Like, you don't want to just, like, poo-poo right off this game. Rocket League has a huge following behind it. I want to say, I hope I'm not misappropriating, but I want to say our voiceover guy, Jason, like really is into Rocket League and goes to some of these events and things like that. So, like, there's definitely a culture out there that loves this game.
Well, at any rate, they want to assure people that nothing will change about the day-to-day enjoyment of their game. I think it's kind of... interesting that wording is used. So basically, in the short term, they say nothing about the game will change, but they're still going to go with its update roadmap and to keep it going for, quote, as long as you'll have us. Psyonix said that they will bring the game to the Epic's game store And that this is, of course, because the acquisition will allow them to grow the games they couldn't do on their own. So, I don't know. They said nothing's changing, but we'll see.
Here's why I think Rocket League does well, and why I actually enjoy Rocket League a lot too. Here's why Rocket League, I think, and it's honestly a great land for Epic, you know, whether you are a fan of Epic or not, it makes sense why they want to have this game, because, and as is mentioned in chat over there, SSG 100 Matt says Rocket League is serious esports, and for sure. Here's the thing about Rocket League. It's a stupidly simple game to explain, right? See this car? Use car to push ball in goal.
Car soccer, two words.
Car soccer, go. Like, and that's Rocket League, right? Whereas Dota, Dota 2.
Oh, fuck that.
Dota 2. You ready? Okay. So you have these lanes, and every lane has some walls and towers, and you're trying to catch the thing at the end of the lane, and you have these 50 different heroes, and let me explain to you how they're all different, and you have this little thing that you can send back to the store.
I'm sorry, that sounds really boring.
Here's the thing. I'm not knocking Dota. I think Dota is super fun in its own way as well. But I think it also goes to, like, I have a lot of friends that say they really enjoy board games. And when I respond, I love Clue, they get pissed off. But here's the thing. Clue is very much a board game. And Clue is a board game you can explain in 5 minutes. Maybe 10. Clue is a little more complicated than something like Candyland. There's still and everybody has their own house rules for Clue. Like, for example, do you bring the piece to the conservatory when you make an accusation, or does it get to stay on the square where it's at? Every house plays it differently.
Movie rules. You explain it all in the foyer.
So there's that, but then there's also Axis and Allies. Like, that's the type of board game that if I don't know how to play that, I'm not a fucking fan. So anyway, my point is, I think part of the reason why Rocket League is so loved and so well in esports is that it's a relatively simple concept when all is said and done. It's a Clue. It's a Monopoly. It's a very easy concept. And that doesn't make it bad. Scrabble is a game in every household, almost. Okay? It's, you know, just a very easy type of game. Bonds 006 in chat says, OMG, why I did not get into Dota. I think going off my explanation there. Kaijudo says, the main reason why people love Rocket League is because when you learn to fly and make aerials, you feel badass. It's a feel-good game. Bobby Blackwolf says, Rocket League is closer to traditional sports than something like Overwatch. That's a good, you know, I know yeah. That might sound, but I get it. Like, because, yeah, it's kind of soccer. Kind of. Sort of. And then they put new modes in the game that are, like, kind of basketball. As Jonah and Matt said, I had friends play a full map game of Axis and Allies. So I don't know why I pick on Axis and Allies. It's a fine game. But, yeah, one of my friends in high school tried to teach me how to play that game, and I was just like... And by the way, did you know, like, when I was playing Magic the Gathering... Like, for the first year I played Magic the Gathering, my friends and I were playing it completely wrong. Completely wrong. Like, we didn't understand the mechanics. And when the computer game came out that kind of forced you to play by the official rules, I'm talking the original computer game that came with the giant fucking Magic the Gathering card and all that stuff. Like, it was very enlightening.
I had, like, one of the ginormous Lords of the Pit. And we used to use the candelabra that let you, like, shuffle any one card into your deck. We would use that particular card to bring out the giant Lord of the Pit that we could put all of his little pitties on it. And then, of course, every so often we would randomly, like, mix in a card from another game. Like, we'd have Captain Picard. And our house rule is that if Captain Picard came out, everyone loses. Everyone else loses. It's an insta-win.
Card games, another good example. Some card games, very easy. Cards Against Humanity. You can teach somebody how to play that game in 2 seconds, right? Card game like...
Taboo is another easy one.
Taboo is pretty... I'm trying to think of a complicated card game.
I've only ever played it drunk.
A lot of card games that
What about like playing something like...
a deck building game.
Gin?
Dominion. Oh, Cribbage.
Cribbage.
Cribbage isn't like hard, but it definitely takes... Like, get some explanation. There's some explanation to it for sure. Pinochle. Another good example. They're not hard games. They just take a while to explain.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. We can talk about card games all night. But I want to talk, speaking of esports, There's a scandalos going on, right?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's not good, but it's not as bad as we might allude to. But so basically, during this World Cup qualifiers for Fortnite, there was one of the pro players, Damian XXIF Cook. He was accused of colluding with other players to help him rank up. So basically, there's some video out there of him landing next to a couple other players, and basically the other players allowing him to kill them to kind of help rank up. And of course, that went viral, and you know, that's not a good face. But on top of that, though, apparently there's been other cheaters as well. So along with that, Epic Games actually went and did some investigating to see kind of what was going on, and there's been bans. So 14-day competitive bans on several different players, including, I think, they didn't name XXIF, but I believe that they were included as well, and they have been stripped of their qualifying spots because of boosting other players.
The boosting thing has been a problem in Overwatch.
Yeah, so.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's kind of hard when you have these online games that you're trying to do qualifiers in without, like, any really big oversight.
It's also an interesting thing that doesn't really exist. I'm trying to think, is there an equivalent in, like, football, basketball as we know it? Like, you know, traditional sports, if you will. Is there an equivalent of boosting? I don't think there really is.
No, it would be, like, throwing a game, but, like,
I guess throwing a game is very bad, but like, you know, if
not so much.
If you go and mentor a camp or something, you're not exactly breaking the rules, you know. Or I guess, can you wear a disguise and go play a minor league game? I guess that would be like the closest thing I can think of. Like, you're wearing a fake mustache and playing in a minor league.
Yeah, that's sort of, that's a little different. This is more of like, I think, yeah, just like, oh hey, you know, we really want those Kings to make it to the playoffs, so let's just all kind of drop the ball and let them throw in those three-pointers, that type of thing.
Oh, the Kings are never going to make the playoffs.
Exactly. That's the only way they would ever win. So, but no one's ever going to do that because they all want to win. And yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about something highly interactive. That's right here, Twitch TV, where you can interact with our show when we're live. Of course, we love our podcast folks as well. And you always can interact with us delayed a little bit over on Twitter, twitter.com/OLR. And you can also do that maybe through Facebook or through our email bag, participate@orangeloungetrader.com. But when you're broadcasting on Twitch, you can interact in real time. And more games are starting to think about how can we kind of incorporate that into our game. And Borderlands 3.
Which looks amazing, by the way.
Yeah, they had a big reveal.
They had the gameplay reveal, and I'm totally in day one. That looks all sorts of awesome.
I have to admit, I did not watch the gameplay reveal yet because I'm still making my way through the other game. I mean, I know a gameplay reveal is not going to give anything away, but I just, you know, I'm just focused on trying to get through the original games before this comes out. But yeah, I'm excited for folks that are into this series, and now I see why people enjoy Borderlands. I get it. So during the Borderlands 3 reveal, they talked about an extension called the Echo Cast. So if you use this extension, apparently the viewers can look at the streamers' loadouts, look at what's in the backpacks. So through the extension, I guess you could probably click on something on the view window, and even if I'm not looking at my inventory at this minute, you can look at my inventory on your Twitch screen. Because that's how the extensions kind of work, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if we use any extensions on VOG Network's channel. I don't. Bobby would have to refresh my memory. I don't think so, because we're not really playing games here. But a lot of the more traditional Twitch extensions, there's things like, you know, you can interact with the streamer, maybe play noises, or, you know, sometimes you can affect what's going on in the game.
My favorites are, like, I was watching the
Mixer does this a lot, too.
I'm watching the other day, there's a guy that he has, like, a currency that they can earn by playing different games in chat, and then they spend that currency on putting cheats in Grand Theft Auto, so they can put cheats in to hurt or, you know, help the player, and it's all sorts of craziness.
Yeah, this Tomb Raider reboot had something like that, and, like, the multiplayer or something, where, like, your Twitch chat could affect what's going on. So I mean, we've heard about games, you know, kind of interacting with Twitch, but anyway, also there will be special loot chests throughout the game. If a streamer opens them, you can opt into a challenge called the Rare Chest Event. This means the viewer would get a copy of whatever the streamer gets. It's kind of I like that. That's kind of interesting. It would be a shift code, I guess, that would be given out and scaled to the viewer's level when you redeem it in your own game. So interesting. The gameplay reveal, I guess the EchoCast extension was coincided with that. So if you were watching the Borderlands 3 reveal, you kind of get an idea how that works, which I missed out on. But did they actually have that going during the gameplay reveal?
I didn't watch it on Twitch, so I don't know.
So interesting, though. I think that's really cool. I like how more games are thinking about how can we like really embrace this streaming thing and like do our own stuff with it. I think that's really cool. So, yeah. SSG100 Matt says, this opens the door for people to judge other people's inventory. I tend to be a massive hoarder in games like this. I would imagine that you could turn it off, I suppose, if you wanted to. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, let's move on. Dark Sakura, what do you have for us?
Well, there is a video game Hall of Fame. Of course, we know about this one, among other ones, but we're talking about the nice, legit one. You know what I mean by legit, right?
Meaning non-pirated, I guess.
Well, no, meaning that it's actually a pretty big one. So this year, it's the Strong's World Video Game Hall of Fame. So the games that are being included are Mortal Kombat, which it's got a deserving place. Super Mario Kart, also Colossal Cave Adventure, and get this, Windows Solitaire. But then again,
I get that.
How much of us wasted so much time on that? Seriously?
Windows Solitaire was a game for filthy casuals.
Filthy casuals, really?
Even, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's a joke. But, and all joking aside, Solitaire, and I feel like this just came up on the show a few weeks ago, Solitaire is a great game for developing motor skills. Like, if you are, you know, maybe older and haven't used computers an awful lot, Solitaire is a great way to learn.
I reckon. It's never...
I've used that in my professional life. That's all why I'm kind of bringing that up. Somebody who's a little less comfortable with computers, I'll say, have you played Solitaire at home? You should think about it.
Okay. Well, it does get you kind of into the point-and-click mentality.
Yes.
You know, which I guess for people doing like data entry or something, that might be worthwhile. But I just think it's very interesting that it's finally being recognized. That instead of just being, you know, bloating software for Microsoft Windows, it's a mainstay. On top of that, for this picture, it's got like the same monitor that Dan and I had when I first moved in with him. This little dinky computer monitor. That's pretty funny. You know, but the other thing about Colossal Adventure is that, you know, Colossal Cave Adventure, sorry, is that it was also a cassette game. So, you know, but the other games that were...
The Colossal Cave Adventure, that's a text adventure game, right?
Yeah.
That predates Zork. So it's kind of like your text adventure representation, right?
Yeah, it's like your intro to all things text. You read? You can play it.
I think that was one of the first, yeah. And I think that's why it's noteworthy.
Okay. But the other thing is that there were some other games that were in the list of finalists but did not make it, including those were Candy Crush Saga, Centipede, DDR, Half-Life, Myst, NBA 2K, Sid Meier's Civilization, and Super Smash Bros. Melee.
Here's the thing. Shouldn't a game have to be out for at least 10 years before we start thinking about the Video Game Hall of Fame, like when it comes to Candy Crush? Because I would say a game like Mortal Kombat, I think if we had evaluated whether it belonged in a Video Game Hall of Fame in 1995 or whatever year that game came out, or even 1 or 2 years after it was out, I'm not so sure we would think that that game's going to end up in the Hall of Fame someday. How controversial it was.
What are my rules for classic game?
Yes. Yeah. But you're not curating this museum, unfortunately.
I'll curate a museum. And it's basically going to be Mass Effect and Sega games.
Which, if you go to the Classic Game of the Week list, is similar to what you...
I have compiled because of Guardian Legend.
Okay, sorry. One exception.
Bitch, don't doubt me. Hearts.
But anyhow, so that's cool. And I see in our chat, SJ100 Matt says, I keep meaning to go to this place. My girlfriend has family in Rochester, and we're up there often. Hey, if you go, take video.
Take a ton of it.
Yeah.
Bring us a souvenir.
Yeah, I'd be curious. Anyway.
Ship me some Waffle House grits.
Metal Mayhem in chat says, didn't cassette games have horrendous accessing and load times? Oh,
fairly
absolutely.
Much, yeah.
Absolutely they did.
Well, on top of that, I'm sure I've spoken ad nauseum about the problems of the Coleco Atom. That anytime you had a power surge, it would erase your cassettes.
Right. But the thing about it, I mean, the cassette was what existed before the disc, which existed before the CD, which is ironic. The audio is also used kind of two of those forms.
to be fair, there were 11-inch floppies and 13-inch floppies around the same time that cassette became a viable storage media.
And I think cassette was just, you know, like, again, there was no way to, like, have a pre-installed game that you could put on your system or what have you without, like, typing it in if it weren't for cassette or disc.
Yeah.
So
you either programmed that shit in BASIC or you... I mean, well, in computers for production at the time were still... some of them were actually still using Fortran and punch cards. So, there you go.
Yeah. So, it is kind of interesting, though, how tapes kind of went to CD later on. But, anyway. So, okay, there you go. Additions to the Video Game Hall of Fame. I get it's a decent selection. I mean, when you hear some of the games they omitted, of course, my fanboy is going, what? No Civilization? They couldn't... Mortal Kombat couldn't wait another year for
Civilization? I knew that would make you sad.
I know, a little bit, but... I can't, like, look at any of those games they picked and say it doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, they all deserve their place in there.
They all deserve it in their own way. Like, even if you kind of look at Solitaire and go, huh? Like, again, you have to look at what did it do for gaming the big picture as opposed to just gaming for the hardcore audience.
Seriously, you know? That is exactly it. I mean, although I must say the thing that disappoints me is that DDR isn't included.
Sure.
Because DDR... for itself was actually fairly revolutionary for genres. Well, it created a genre,
sure,
practically.
DDR,
well, Beatmania really did.
DDR is why we're here.
If it were me, I would put Beatmania in before DDR because we wouldn't have DDR without Beatmania. Or Spider Stomp.
Here's the thing, though. Here's what's ultimately going to happen because this is based in America and it's
America
thing. I think DDR was more known here than Beatmania, which, to be fair, is Konami's own damn fault because they released it here as Hip Hop Mania and it wasn't really the same kind of thing.
And they did that, I think, after DDR.
Yeah, and they never tried the 5 key releases here and that stuff until
they
way
did.
Later.
Yeah,
way later. So, I mean, DDR is what people know here.
My first exposure was BM98.
Sure, but you also go to anime conventions, yeah. Which is not, you know.
Well, at the time I did.
At the time. Anyway. All right, well, let's move on and let's get to our next story, which is from Loki.
All right. So this has got me very excited, even though we know no details about this yet, and there's a good chance that they're going to fuck it up. But
you're still going to pre-order your ticket.
Oh, yeah. Seriously. So Saints Row the Movie is something that's going to be worked on. And apparently right now they've got a director attached, Director F. Gary Gray, who is, working on, or he had worked on The Fate of the Furious and the upcoming Men in Black International. And then, of course, Greg Rousseau is going to be writing the treatment as well, and he's rebooting the Mortal Kombat franchise in the movie forms. And, yeah, so that's about all we know about it right now. I'm assuming this is something that's, like, going to be coming way later on. They got to have Daniel Day Kim as Gat because that's really the only way I'd want to see that. And what the hell, let's just put Troy Baker in there as well as the boss because that'd be awesome. But
what do you want to see in a Saints Row movie?
I want to see fucking crazy shit, but being that it's The Fate and the Furious, that movie is pretty over the top as it was, so let's just like take that. Let's take the new Fast and the Furious spinoff movie that they have coming out pretty soon. Take all of that stuff and tell the director, do whatever the fuck you want. Just go as crazy as you want and make it. It doesn't even have to be believable. Just go fucking nuts, and then that would be perfect.
Tiger Claw in chat asks, "Will the Saints Row movie have the self awareness and meta humor?" If it doesn't, I hope they don't make it. Like, it needs to. Like, seriously, just, like, and I don't think they should directly adapt one of the games. But, like, Saints Row 3, again, I cannot stress this enough. I was laughing so hard during the opening moments of Saints Row 3. Like, I was crying. Like, it's just, like, the game is so fucking funny. Like, and my character, you know, I had, like, a female character that was, like, you know, like, falling through planes and stuff like that. Like, the opening is just ridiculous.
Yes.
And I'm just, like, this game is so, so stupid. I love it. I love it. So
yes, I want that. I want
that, too. Like,
so
just
stupid that it's amazing.
Make that bad Sonic movie that Loki wants to see, but Saints Row. Put Jim Carrey in the Saints Row movie. Is there a part for him in there?
Not really, but yeah, just like over the top. Like, there's plenty of movies that are kind of over the top. I mean, many in the Fast and the Furious franchise. I mean, they're just like the whole the Fate and the Furious thing was just over the top. But that's why it was good, you know? I just don't want him to do like a cheap, just like, this is going to be kind of like Fast and the Furious. But I don't know. Like, Gat is such a great character. It's going to be hard to find some. If they recast him, it's going to be hard to, like, get that character right. The boss can be who... That's going to be the hard part, is the boss, because who's it going to be? Because it can be pretty much anybody. I don't know.
Metal Mayhem in chat says, a Saints Row movie needs to have a dubstep gun and a giant purple dildo bat. Honestly, co-signed. Like, that might surprise you that I'm saying that, but those are
and
the
Professor Genki.
Those are the things that make Saints Row, like, fucking stupid, but, like, in that really funny way. You know what I mean?
And this is perfect for, like, that really stupid action movie genre where it's like, you'll make it, it'll be fucking stupid, and it'll make tons of money, and they'll make more and more, and it'll be whatever.
Bonds 006 says, Saints Row film, a very bad over-the-top Deadpool, sans Ryan Reynolds. Deadpool, honestly, maybe Deadpool is a good thing to kind of look at for to do this. Yeah.
I'm co-signing Ryan Reynolds as the boss for the Saints Row movie. Hell yes.
I don't, that the man can only do so much, but that would be amazing if he did. Wasn't Ryan Reynolds supposed to be doing like the Clue movie at some point?
I don't know. He can do everything.
He signed on to all those board game movies or something. Whatever happened to that? Development hell, I guess. I don't know.
But yes, Daniel Day Kim and Ryan Reynolds.
They're saying Keith David is the narrator.
Well, Keith David's supposed... Yeah, he's just supposed to be Julius, so...
SG100 Matt says, that Hobbs and Shaw movie looks ridiculous. I'm considering.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep that level of ridiculousness and over the top. You know, it just keep it going.
Yeah. All right. Anyhow, let's move on. Got another story here before we get to our classic game of the week, and this is about a classic game of sorts. Earthworm Jim has a new game in development for the new Intellivision Amico, which, of course, as we know, is coming out in the year 2020.
I still don't like those controllers. I get it. Like, I don't like them. Yeah. I hope they have traditional controllers as well.
Yeah. I'm sorry to call this out on air, but make sure when you do this, it's away from the mic, because remember, the new mics are super sensitive, so it's picking up the bags. Sorry.
And I was sitting on the mic.
Anyway. The new Intellivision, of course, is coming out, 10-10-2020, and Earthworm Jim hasn't had a game since, 95? So they're making a new one. Oh, no, there was an HD remake. They did do that. It was not a proper sequel. So the original team members are participating in this, including Doug Tenaple, which he's a character. We'll put it that way. But my understanding is that he is doing it on a volunteer basis. So if you're worried about possibly money and all that stuff, it sounds like that is it's going to be a little easier to separate the art from the artist in this particular circumstance, because he's volunteering, which is kind of interesting. But cool, I guess. And, of course, Tommy Tallarico, he did the music and the soundtrack before. So he's going to be doing that again, of course. And what a coinkydink that Tommy Tallarico is playing such a role as the CEO of Intellivision. So it kind of makes sense why this game is the one that they're bringing back. I was interested, though, when I saw a lot of the comments on this about how, well, looks like I'm not playing Earthworm Jim because they're putting it on this trash console. And, well, I'm just fuck exclusivity agreements. I'm not going to play it.
Well, they don't know what.
And I'm just kind of like, oh, shut up. Like, do y'all know what business is? Because if the Amico wasn't trying to get some exclusives and some games that are like kind of like must-haves or must-tries,
then it's not going
to
sell.
You all would shit on the Amico for not having any games worth playing. So, like, this kind of goes back to the beginning.
I just don't know about the controllers, though. Like, I don't remember, you know, the ColecoVision too fondly, and I know the Intellivision stuff's kind of similar. I don't know. I have a hard time imagining how that's going to work, but I'm sure it'll make it work.
Bobby is pointing out, you saw a render, but not the actual controller. So
right. There's
still time for things to change based on fan feedback.
There you go.
Metal Mayhem says, so long as the new Earthworm Jim is like the first two games and not Earthworm Jim 3D, I'll be happy. I think it's a safe bet to say it's going to be like the first two games that you remember.
Yeah, I think that's what they were going for in this console. It's supposed to be all 2D stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Dr. Tetsuya says, I know Tommy made a comment going to bat for him, whatever it's worth, but I do hope he does a good soundtrack for this game. And it's also interesting to point out, you know, for whether you hate the exclusiveness or not, remember, Intellivision has very firmly said games will cost at most, what, $10? I think it was actually under that. It was like $8. So that means I would assume Earthworm Jim is going to be no different. It's going to be like an $8 game. So, interesting. I'd be curious to see
what happens when it comes out.
You know, it's interesting to see how the Intellivision is coming into its own. And I'll be very curious to see more moves like this about what kind of games are they really going to bring to the table as we approach 2020 and the release. You know, we still have over a year to go, a year and a half to go before we get to October of 2020. So I'll be very curious to see what more develops in the coming months. So, all right. As S200 Matt points out, the main thing is they're taking their time. And Bobby Blackwolf pointing out they're not targeting people who would use pro controllers. They're targeting mobile users. We'll see. I'll give it a chance. A lot of this is still hypothesis and theory.
And that's fine. I'm fine with the controllers being the way they are. I just hope that they have the forethought to like we'll support Bluetooth and you can bring your own damn controller if you want. You know, that's fine. Would be nice. I'm not saying they have to do it the way everybody else is doing it, but I mean, if I have my choice between, you know, using the type of controls I would on a mobile game versus an actual controller, I'm going to choose an actual controller.
Well, we will see. There's still a long way to go. Anyway, before we get to the release of Earthworm Jim, we're going to take a trip down memory lane and visit the classic game of the week. Every week here on the show, Dark Soccer steps into the gaming vault and tries to find a game that she thinks, hey, you kids, you should be checking this one out. This is a classic, y'all.
We do talk about this one a lot.
Yes. So, we have brought this game up a few times. So, mm-hmm. And it's not a Sega game.
Nope.
No.
It is an absolute Nintendo game.
So what is the classic game of the week?
Clue Clue Land, which came out in 1984 in Japan and just under a year later in the U.S. So in Japan, it came out November 22nd, 84. And in the U.S., it came out October 18th, 85. And then in 87 in Europe. So Clue Clue Land, first of all, people are like, what does this have to do with... is it Clue from Tron? What? No. It actually is an anglicization of the Japanese title Kuru Kuru. It was Kuru Kuru Land, which basically Kuru Kuru is an onomatopoeia that means around and around. Or you might have also heard Guru Guru, you know, same thing. So basically the main character has to grab poles and swing around. So that's where it comes from. It's the same kind of title for the Game Boy Advance game, Kuru Kuru Kururin. So anyway, in Clue Clue Land, you play a balloon fish named Bubbles in the U.S. She was Gloopy in Japan, which I think Gloopy is a funnier name. She swims around in a maze trying to uncover these gold ingots. So you basically are fighting the sea urchin called Unira, who is stealing all of the treasures in the underwater kingdom of Clue Clue Land. So Bubbles has to retrieve all the treasure and spin around and gather all the gold ingots. And
the rupees.
They
look like rupees.
Well, Mario
this
coins.
Because they reuse all the things anyway. But at any rate, it is, if she gets attacked by an Onita, then she'll lose a life. She can also, though, stun an Onita by using a sound wave. You can also lose your life if you fall into a black hole or when the time runs out. And, of course, you run out of all lives, it's game over. And then sometimes you have to pass over the ingots in an odd number to uncover them. And because they will go between their uncovered side and a dull side. You know, it's kind of like how... Kubert goes in later levels where you have to do double jumps on some of the items. There was other versions that came out. There was a versus Clue Clue Land. Have you guys ever seen one?
Oh God, I think I did once. I do remember like a multi versus machine, and I think Clue Clue Land was one of them because I kind of made fun of it.
That's how I saw my first versus Clue Clue Land. It was at a Godfather's Pizza in Mobile, Alabama. So, of course, you know, released for the coin-op Nintendo Versus system. It had twice as many puzzles and a a new enemy called Boss Unira, different level themes, and some other features. And a port of this one was released as the final game for the Famicom Disk System, as called Clue Clue Land, Welcome to New Clue Clue Land. The NES version and the Famicom Disk System version are both unlockable in game Animal Crossing, the one on GameCube, that was retitled as Clue Clue Land D outside of Japan. Other ports in 2001, there was a port to the Sharp Zaris PDA. We had in 2004, it was released on the Famicom Mini for Game Boy Advance. Bubbles was also a trophy in Super Smash Bros. Melee. And the Clue Clue Land NES music and the Unira enemy are items in Super Smash Bros. Brawl. And, of course, they also re-return as items in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. She's also in a secret level of the Game Boy Advance game DK King of Swing, which was pretty much inspired by Clue Clue Land. There's a micro game of Clue Clue Land in WarioWare Smooth Moves for Wii, and Clue Clue Land Spintendo micro game in MarioWare Twisted. The rupee from the Legend of Zelda series was modeled after the ingot sprite from Clue Clue Land.
That money bag also looked like the money bag that was in Legend of Zelda: Link to Adventures of Link.
And they also said that the Dig Dogger enemy from Legend of Zelda series was basically based off of the Unira. Of course, Clue Clue Land is also one of the games included in NES Remix. And there you have it.
All right.
Kuru Kuru Lando.
Your classic game of the week, a game that some of you in chat are like, I never really understood how this game works. What is this? What is this that's being drawn on stream right now? A pair of glasses?
Yep.
Yeah, a little pair of glasses. How about that?
Because, so. I mean, a lot of them just were like, you know, little puzzles. Once you figured out what the puzzle piece was, then it was really easy to go in and figure out how to swing around them.
Yeah, it's kind of like that game Anticipation. Once you've played it enough, that little pencil draws like two lines. You know what the answer is.
Anticipate.
It makes that game a whole lot less fun at that point.
I was trying to do a Rocky joke.
I know. All right. Thank you for that classic game of the week selection. Speaking of classic games, we have a contribution this week for our little break segment here we do in the middle of the show. And it is from our pal Bobby Blackwolf, who went to a classic game show in Atlanta last week and found this really cool TI-99-4A. Y'all remember that computer?
I think I had one.
I had two. Yeah.
I didn't. That,
I've done it as a classic system, remember?
You did, yes, right. You did do a classic system. Well, get this. So what he's about to show us is Dragon's Lair, the 80s game, running on a TI-99-4A.
What?
And I don't mean like some scaled down port, because there was like a Commodore 64 version of Dragon's Lair, but it was completely different.
How much RAM do they have to put in this thing to make it work?
Well, we're about to find out. So why don't we turn it over to Bobby and find out.
Hello, Orange Lounge Radio. Bobby Blackwolf here. I know I'm usually on a couple hours ago, but Rob really likes having content in the middle of the show, and I'm here at the Vintage Computer Festival Southeast 7.0 in Roswell, Georgia, and I saw a game that is not a classic game of the week because it was just released, but it's for really old systems, and it's a really old game. So I have Alan here. Alan, what am I looking at here?
You are looking at Dragon's Lair for the Texas Instruments TI-99-4A home computer.
And this is obviously the side-scrolling platformer that was released on the NES, right?
I got something to do. No, absolutely not. This is an actual conversion. This is a fully licensed conversion of Dragon's Lair made by Harmless Lion. And he took the high-definition video and audio from the PC release in, I think it was the early 2000s, digitized it with his own software, including the video and the audio, and then produced the game out of it. He took 80 megabytes of data, crammed it into this little cartridge that gets banked in 8K chunks, and it's fully playable.
And I have been playing it, and it's just as unforgiving as I remember. But you really don't have like a laser disc player hiding under here, right? You're not doing like video trickery?
No, those are actually a little bit too expensive for my budget.
So how long do you, like, what's the backstory behind this? Like, how long did it take him to do it?
I want to say it took him at least a couple of years to work on it, but he's been actually building the fundamentals for a couple of decades. If you've been in the Atari Age forums at all, in the TI sub forums of Atari Age, you'll see where he's put up some demos here and there of sampled audio, sampled video. One of his first ones actually was Spaceballs that he did on a, I think it was a 4 megabyte cartridge. And he says that this was his target game. This is one of the games he always wanted to do, and he spent all this time getting the process perfected so he could produce it.
So is this an unmodified TI-99, or is this running any expansion boards that you're running it on here?
No, this is a completely stock, unexpanded TI-99-4A console. That means there's no 32K. It does not have the F-18A replacement for the video processor. It's completely stock, as if you opened the box in 1983.
So do you know, is he worried about any, like, takedowns, like whoever owns the Dragon Slayer IP? Because we just saw the Super Mario Brothers Commodore 64 conversion, and apparently Nintendo sent a cease and desist once it hit the media sites. Has he been contacted by anybody that owns the rights, or do we even know who has the Dragon Slayer rights right now?
Well, the rights to Dragon Slayer is owned by a company called Digital Leisure. I believe they're out of Canada, and he actually contacted them, purchased a license, and got their blessing on this conversion of Dragon Slayer for the TI.
That's awesome. So I know there's a boxed copy here, and I know that you're giving it away, but where can people find it if they can't get a boxed copy?
It's actually no longer available. He produced 155 cartridges, and he was able to ship all of his orders before the license expired for production. And at this point, there will never be another release of it.
No ROMs anywhere?
There are no ROMs anywhere, and that has a lot to do with the licensing, and plus it's just, you know, it's one of those things. It just kind of makes it a little bit more valuable that way.
So if people want to play it, they need to come to, like, a vintage computer festival somewhere?
At this point, yes. The only way to play it is if you know somebody who has it.
Or if you win it here, which I competed and got third to last.
Actually, I think you're fourth to last.
I'm fourth to last now.
Yes. Today, right now, I do have a fully boxed copy, completely unopened, ready for the winner today to take home with them. Right now, we have about 20 minutes left in the contest. We do have a top score winner by the name of JR. He's walking around here having a good time, waiting to take home his copy of Dragon's Lair.
But yeah, so it was fun to play. I didn't do too well. I blame the controller. But then he fixed the controller, and I can't play again because I've already played. So I can't compete again. It runs on regular Atari joystick, Atari-style joystick and everything, and it is what it says it is. And it's really impressive. I remember seeing a demo of this. You had just gotten a demo last year.
Yes. Yeah, last year at VCF, I was able to obtain the demo from Mike Brent, Tercy, Harmless Lion. I was able to show it here and had it playing. It was quite amazing. A lot of people stopped by, take a look at it, and we were really champing at the bit to get the final release, and we finally got it. And we're just, the technical achievement is absolutely amazing.
Now, remember, I said that this is an unmodified TI-99-4A, but obviously, like, an out of the box cartridge wouldn't be able to do this. Like, what is there some trickery, hardware trickery that's going on to actually make this work?
There is absolutely some sorcery going on in here. Mike Brent, he knows this hardware inside and out. This is an absolute masterpiece, a symphony of hardware and software. It's more than just the program. It took a cartridge that had not been invented. It extends the banking scheme of our cartridge port beyond what it's ever been used. The cartridge actually has the ability to hold 128 megabytes of data banked in 8K chunks. He has it loaded with 80 megabytes of data right now for this game. So Mike put a lot of work. He's put a lot of time, blood, sweat, and tears to make what is an absolute masterpiece.
And I guess here's the question some people would ask is, why would someone go through that? Like, why would someone do that?
Why not?
Because it's there.
Because it's there. You know, it's if you have that one thing that you really, really want to do, and you get the opportunity to do it, you'd be a fool to pass it up.
Dragon's Lair on the TI-99-4A. Hardware trickery, but it's stock system, and it does exactly what it says it does. So I'm going to send it back over to you, Rob, over in the OLR studios. Maybe this will be a classic game of the week in 10 years since it just came out right now.
Dragon's Lair, a fantasy adventure where you become a valiant knight on a quest to rescue the fair princess from the clutches.
And we're looking at some footage there that Bobby's closing the video up with. That was great. I mean, considering the hardware that it's on, that looks fantastic. That's great. So thank you so much, Bobby, for picking that up and checking that out for us there. That looked great. And I love that. I love the answer at the end there. Why do this? Why not?
Well,
I love it.
I think the moment that he said, you know, that it was unmodified, I was sort of like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
pretty crazy.
Well done. Kudos. Kudos to everybody involved with that, because the person that was being interviewed there was not the creator. Of course, I'm sure you picked up there in the interview, but I you know, was representing the game. And I just, you know, I love people that will go to the great lengths to kind of do those things and preserve the classics, even if it's in these very, like, strange ways. So super cool. And what you didn't see in that video is that Bobby actually went out to the parking lot and keyed the car of the winner of that Dragon's Lair cartridge. So sorry to the I'm making all that up there, but good job, Bobby, not getting last place in that contest. He was fourth from last.
What was the contest? Playing Dragon's Lair?
I think he was trying to get a high score on that Dragon's Lair game.
Yeah, I would have lost that.
If you're not used to playing it. Oh, God. I did some contest a long time ago. I think it was like Stampede on the Atari 2600. And it was like the official Twin Galaxies ranking or something. I was like third from last place. So I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But I thought it was cool because, like, as I was doing it, they were giving me tips on how to get better at it. So it's kind of neat. So,
The way you get the highest score is you fake your video, or you upload a fake score online and say that the video's gone.
Now, Bobby in chat says, the guy who won the cartridge actually has the arcade cabinet, so he knew everything. Well, you know what? At least you know it's going to a good home. You know, if somebody splurged the money for the arcade cabinet, you know they're a fan of Dragon's Lair. And so, you know what? It's gonna go to a good home. And maybe something, you know, I know we joke about, could that be a classic game here in 10 years on OLR, the TI? I don't know if the original Dragon's Lair has surely been a classic game at some point. I don't know. I would think. But maybe not.
All right, now do Space Ace.
You know what really impressed me? Now you got to do Space Ace. No. Anyway. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you for the segment, and thank you for sharing that here on Orange Lounge Radio. Appreciate it. And if you guys have ideas for a break segment here at Orange Lounge Radio, we are all ears. You can reach out to me directly on Twitter if you want, at Mr. Rob Roberts. That's M-R, Rob Roberts. And, of course, you can always reach the show on Twitter as well, at OLR. And there's always good old-fashioned email, participate@orangeloungeradio.com. In the meantime, let's get to some rapid-fire news and Traveler. Oh, thank you. Bobby says he will upload that to YouTube if the podcast audience wants to actually see what that looked like, because you could hear the audio there, especially at the end. You can really hear the audio and hear how, you know, for a TI-99-44A, how faithful it is. But, yeah, hopefully you get to see that there. Thank you, Bobby. All right, let's get into some rapid-fire news and some quick other news that happened around the world this week. Loki.
Yes, so let's talk a little bit about what's coming out for your free game. Well, your games with paid subscription to online services. Not really free.
I can't believe it's not free.
Here's what's coming out on Xbox and on PlayStation. So Xbox One for May, we're getting Marooners from May 1st to the 31st. And the Golf Club 2019 featuring PGA Tour from May 16th through the 15th of June. And then on the Xbox 360, which is also, of course, backwards compatible with Xbox One. Comic Jumper from May 16th to the 31st. And last but not least, Earth Defense Force Insect Armageddon on May 1st through the 15th. Definitely go check that out because it's awesome. It's a spinoff, but it's fun.
I'll be sure to download that in your honor, Loki, since I know you don't have an Xbox One, but I do.
But I have that game on my Xbox 360.
Of course you do.
And actually I have that on PC too, so, you know.
Like I would question it.
Yes. And then, of course, this is pretty awesome. But so For Honor, they've got now, of course, since May the 4th was yesterday, and that's a big Star Wars day. So along with that, in For Honor, you can use now lightsabers that aren't legally legally not lightsaber, but laser sword type weapons can be used. And you can go check those out if you have that game. So
bright
laser
swords.
Weapons.
Bright swords. Very bright swords.
Sabers of lasers.
That's true. I keep forgetting, like, yesterday was a Star Wars holiday. I'm using my quotey fingers. But I guess like, an actual thing in California was here, and they made some honorary holiday. You know, not a real holiday, but one of those, like, honorary holidays is, like, official in California now, so it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, you know, happy Cinco de Mayo, I guess, you know. I actually – you know what's funny?
It's Revenge of the Fifth.
I went to brunch with some friends this morning, and it was, you know, I had to suggest the place because they suggested the place last time. So I was like, oh, let's go. And I was just – last night I was like, oh, Alan really likes that new taco bar place. And there's – it opened up – they just opened up one up in Folsom. So let's go to the taco bar place. Not even thinking today's Cinco de Mayo. And I get up this morning and I go, oh, fuck. It's Cinco de Mayo, and I just suggested we go to the taco place.
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, we got there early enough. It wasn't horrible. But by the time we were leaving – it was like a shit show waiting to get in. They had like the radio station out there doing promotions and everything.
It's just, I should have gotten tacos today. It would have been probably cheaper.
Yeah,
oh, well.
Right?
I forgot.
Gosh. All right, moving on. Other rapid fire news. Let's talk about Anthem. Let's talk about a game that's kind of not done so well in the fan base. Well, BioWare is reassuring folks that Anthem is not being abandoned, even though it's sure starting to look that way. Because executive producer Mark Dara and lead producer Michael Gamble both have started working on other BioWare projects. And what's interesting, Mark Dara over on Twitter at BioMarkDara said, "We aren't working on Dragon Age 3. We aren't working on Dragon Age 5. ... I guess that's that." Like, just fucking pointing a laser sword right at the fact that the team has very clearly moved on to Dragon Age 4, many of them.
Well, right, because, you know, Dragon Age 3 already came out.
Well, yeah, of course.
It was Inquisition.
Just, yeah, 3 was Inquisition, if you didn't already know. So,
which was awesome.
So, anyway, well, hopefully Dragon Age 4 is awesome because... but anyway, it was very important also, because even though some of these high-profile folks have left, BioWare is reaffirming commitment to Anthem's follow-through on some of the shortcomings that they had earlier. So Michael Gamble in a tweet said, "There's been a lot of incorrect speculation on this. The studio's support and commitment to Anthem has not changed." Quoting a tweet from Chad Robertson at BioWare, who said, "We remain 100% committed to Anthem and look forward to showing players the new content we're working on. We want to make sure we aren't overpromising, so our updates on what's coming in the game will be focused when we have things near completion." So my understanding is they put out a calendar that they haven't really been able to follow very well. And just Anthem, unfortunately, like, everything that we just kind of feared was going to happen with Anthem is happening. And I think that's all we really need to say about that. Best of luck to the team, and I hope they're able to make a Diablo 3-esque situation out of this. But, yeah. Anyhow. Let's move on and talk about a Kickstarter that met its goal this week. I think we brought this up on the show previously.
Yeah.
Antstream is the Kickstarter. They met their goal.
Nice.
And I should disclose, I ended up backing it. Somebody actually posted to Discord that they met their goal, and that was the reminder to me. I was like, oh, yeah, shit, I was supposed to go donate my money. So I did. And they've actually hit their first stretch goal, which is going to be prioritize. They don't want to, like, overpromise when PlayStation 4 support's coming, but they're prioritizing PlayStation 4 support. So that will be something that happens. If you are not familiar with Antstream, it is a, you know, it's kind of trying to legalize what a lot of you are doing through ROMs, okay? And it's going to be allowing you to play games on the Amiga, the Commodore 64, Sega Genesis, the ZX Spectrum, and all, because this is actually a company that's based over in Britain. So obviously ZX was a much bigger deal over there, and Commodore was a huge deal over there too. So they're focusing a lot on those systems, but this will be out in the U.S. as well, they are saying, and U.S. people can back the Kickstarter, which I think has 4 or 5 more days on it. They showed some early alpha play on a recent charity stream overseas. And that was, when I watched that, that really kind of sold me on it. They were playing Double Dragon, and they were doing, like, challenges. And one of the challenges they were doing was as many headbutts as they could in one segment of the game in 60 seconds. And I thought those challenges were cool and something to, like, add to retro that isn't already there. Because, again, I shouldn't be reading the comments section, but my stupid ass always inevitably does. and a lot of people taking issue with Ant Stream because it's old. It's the games are old. People are emulating them anyway.
And don't.
You're fucking doing it illegally. Like, you can sugarcoat it all you want, but technically you're not supposed to be doing that. It's just that, you know, they haven't enforced it as long. Here's the more valid criticism of Ant Stream that, you know, Ant Stream is streaming. So you're not downloading the ROMs to your computer or your Xbox or your and playing them off that. You are streaming it like Google Stadia. But again, these games are not at 1080p 60 frames a second. So I think there's a little more allowance.
I think there's a lot of web pages that are probably larger than these games. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that stream. Oh no, I don't have, you know.
Yeah, the resolution.
I know my gigabit down.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot lower. I'm not so worried about if it's going to kill bandwidth or not. But I do understand some people are a little more hesitant because of that. But I also understand that that is one way to make the experience consistent between Xbox One and mobile phones and all that stuff. So anyway. You know, but take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. I just told you I backed it, so, you know, now I guess I have an investment in it for whatever it's worth. But I'm excited to play the Commodore 64 games in an environment that reminds me of the old GameTap, which has a little more competition going with it, bring just a little more fun in some old classic games.
I wanted to mention real quick, since I forgot to mention PlayStation, for the month of May, we're getting Overcooked and Edith Finch. So those are the two games we're getting.
Ooh, Edith Finch is such a good game. Yeah. So, yeah, and Dark Tetsuya says, Antstream is getting the rights to host these, so I don't think there's any legality issues there. Nope. And you know what? They said people would never pay for music once Napster and LimeWire and all that was a thing, and then iTunes came out, charged a reasonable rate, made it real easy, and completely changed the industry. And, of course, now we're in a day – iTunes is still doing its thing, but now it's probably more on that side, Apple Music and Spotify and Pandora and everything in that streaming space. Ironically, here we are talking about streaming that legitimizes it. So anyway, enough talk about that. Let's move on to another rapid fire story. Dark Sakura.
Well, it's finally happening and we've kept ringing it up, but Bloodstained is happening. Yay.
Finally.
So it looks like we have a release date for Xbox One, PS4, and PC that's going to be on June 18th. And the Switch version will be out on June 25th. But the time seems to have been, just from what I can tell, that the extra development time should really make it a very stellar release.
Did you see that trailer they put out recently that had like Igarashi in it going, "We heard that you thought the graphics were crap, so we made it better." It was very self-aware. Again, going back to what we kicked off the show with this week, fan backlash causing changes. Well, but it does look really good.
But yeah, it is designed by Igarashi Koji, who is such a rock star. That was like the happy thing of my last E3, was getting to meet him. And then, of course, the thing that actually I'm most excited about is the music, because the music is done by Yamane Michiru, who was the lady who did all the music for Symphony of the Night, and Yamada Ippo, who was a Resident Evil musician. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. Also, it's supposed to be like an even bigger castle, like the largest one in any of Igarashi's games. So I'm excited. I might be a little bit more excited than I can safely keep us PG-rated.
In this game, my dick is bigger than ever with his castle, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
His castle
massive
dick.
E-peen.
And then, of course, there's been this trailer floating around for Left 4 Dead 3. Yeah, it's fake. It's fake.
If you believe that Valve was doing a game with a 3 in it, you were setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
I believe someday that's going to happen. And it'll be all of the games, all the 3s.
Today is not that day.
No.
But you can, you know, pretty much you can look at it. There's some other, you know, red flags that indicate that it's fake, apart from Valve just denying it. You know, there's like licensed items in the game, like Quaker Oats. And they use like maps in it from some of the other games. So, yeah, if you look at it, you can tell. But the only thing that we've really seen are just some, like, allegedly leaked environmental screenshots.
Didn't we have a story just, like, 2 or 3 weeks ago, too, that the Left 4 Dead team was working on it? Or, like, a lot of people that were involved with it were working on a very similar type of thing, much akin to this Burnout Destruction Derby or whatever that game is called. They just put it out, and I need to play
Destructive,
it. Destructive driving or driving something like that.
Dangerous driving.
Dangerous driving, that's it.
I'll be honest, too. I went back to look at some of the screenshots, and they don't look like they would be anything in a Left 4 Dead game. Like, it's not anything that looks relatively modern unless it's, like, in Italy. Really damaged Italy or somewhere in the Middle East.
Sorry, I can't stop laughing.
Maybe
now.
Greece.
I can't stop laughing now at calling that game Distracted Driving, because now I'm just imagining a trailer that just shows, like, clips from Burnout. When you text on your phone and drive and then massive burnout, you could cause an accident.
And by the way, if anyone wants to see the images referred to, it's a short URL. So it's, is it pronounced Imgur?
Imgur? I Imgur.
imgur.com/A=Alpha/B=Bravo, C=Charlie, W=Whiskey, lf=Foxtrot, 6JJ8.
Hope you write fast.
Okay. It was Back for Blood was their game.
Back for Blood, thank you.
Well, and marvel at my NATO alphabet skills, yo.
All right. let's move on and
travel. I'll link this in the chat.
Let's find some things that are coming out soon as we look at some world release dates and some things that are coming out since Left 4 Dead 3 will not be.
All right. Well, we're only getting a few games out this week. So Life is Strange 2, Episode 3, Wastelands is coming on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Yakuza Kiwami 2 is out on PC. And finally, Saints Row the Third coming out on Nintendo Switch. That's it.
All right. And if we travel to Japan, there's no releases in Japan this week. I believe Golden Week was last week, maybe wrapping up right now. I don't remember exactly.
Everyone's coming back.
I don't remember exactly how many days it is. But regardless, it would be similar to like the day after Christmas. You're not going to see any games come out.
If I'm correct, in Golden Week, one of the holidays involved in that has people going back to their hometowns.
Oh.
So quite likely people would be coming back.
Yeah.
So no point in releasing anything.
I mean, it's a big deal there to like what Christmas is here when like people travel and go and, you know, they're gone for days and so forth, you know, so just like here,
like businesses shut down.
Yeah. You don't get like the game releases don't pick up until what, like mid-January after Christmas, you know, maybe you get, I don't know. Now we're getting seeing one or two big ones that'll come out in the couple weeks after. But yeah. Anyway, long story short, no releases in Japan right now, but there's good reason for it just with the culture over there. So I will turn it over to Europe, Dark Sakura.
All of these come out on May 9th, and all of them are for Switch. So Farm Expert 2019, Mortal Kombat 11, and Saints Row the Third, the full package.
An autoplay video on this site, sorry.
Okay, but that's all.
Okay, let's move on, and we will go to the mailbag. You guys send us emails. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com, and we love to read these emails live on air, and I believe we have one email tonight.
That we do.
Saving you from Drag Race discussion. So all
yay, thank you.
Girl, I got stuff to say about Silky,
I know, justice for that.
Nope,
but email.
That sloppy bitch. Anyway. Hello, LR. I wanted to let Rob know that his memory has not failed him. There was, in fact, a 2v2 mode in Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3.
I knew it.
It was relatively basic. There was no tagging in or out, just the second member of a team appearing when the first was KO'd, and the round ending when both members are KO'd. It was still best 2 out of 3. It wasn't played very often, though, since it cost double the price of an ordinary versus match, and it didn't typically last twice as long. I'm sure that a lot of folks forgot about it.
That is, that everything is saying is correct, but the arcade operator could set the price of that. I think the default was double, but I remember a place that was only like 1 credit to do that mode. Mm-hmm. And it's a good way to like sample. I mean, the game had already been out for years at that point, but it's a good way to sample multiple characters when you're like, I don't know if I want to play Katana or Melina. So you can do both. So that's what was cool about it.
That would be team sibling rivalry.
Yes.
Team, I think I'm a clone now. Personally, I was far more interested in Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3's 8-player tournament mode, which set up a single elimination tournament consisting of one-round matches between 8 players. The thing cost 8 credits to play, but it was well worth it, because when all the matches finished and a winner was crowned, that person got to select any of the ending rewards available in the game, including the Supreme Demonstration. Remember that? The machine would play every single finishing move in the game, which would take over 7 minutes. And he sent us a link that I'm going to post in chat per request.
I had the forethought to dump it here on the thing. We'll do a midpoint break some week where we just play the finishing move.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Actually, that would be a perfect bathroom break because it's 7 minutes.
I never saw that mode. I heard about it, but I never saw that tournament mode ever actually get used. So
I have exactly once.
Yeah, so actually, I love that you sent this email to kind of remind us. And I was like, oh, is that what it did? Or I guess that's one of the options. But still, that's really cool.
At any rate, I just posted it in the chat. And if we want to add it into maybe show notes for posting the podcast. So
if I remember, I'll do my best. It's a YouTube. So I'm sure if you just Google it, you're going to
find it. It's a tube
it.
Of the U.
Yes. Or are you sure you don't want me to read the URL?
Girl, it's a lot more complicated than what I read.
All right.
Anyway, thanks again for the show and have a great week. Hugs, Aaron YYR.
Well, thanks. Thanks for that. I'm always down to talk about the old school Mortal Kombats.
Well, I don't know. It's just sort of been like I've been in this like crazy Mortal Kombat nostalgia. If you go to my fan page, which is Dark Sakura, I will link it in chat for those here. Wink, wink, nudge,
wink,
nudge.
Wink, nudge, nudge, like my status.
Well, not just that. Actually, follow my page. Yes. But I linked the old making of Mortal Kombat. So, which is pretty cool. It's just basically how they did a lot of the mocap. It was a very, very cool watch. I mean, it also talks into just how primitive their mocap techniques were back then and how it's evolved to what we have now. So, yeah, that was the only other email. So, thank you, YYR.
Toshin, a blast from the past in our chat tonight. Good to see you. Is in our chat saying, a good thing the new arcade 1-Up cabs out now make the modes more accessible. You know, I got to say, if I'm a really good boy on my spending, I think I'm going to buy myself one of those cabinets. I want it.
We were.
I want it. There's just I have no other explanation.
We
I
were thinking
it.
Of the Tempest one. But.
Oh, that'd be cool.
But. Black Knight Sword of Rage.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You got
Dan's
that.
Dan's like, we'll be fine with the pro. Fuck no. It's not Black Knight without having the second play field. I want a fucking premium. Stomp my foot. Veruca Salt moment.
Bob Coffee in chat says the arcade 1-Up cabinets are okay. Yeah, I know they're not like the real thing and they're smaller and it's a different type of screen.
Well, I think the Mortal Kombat ones are different, though. I think those are bigger, though, aren't those?
What?
So they have like...
I think a little.
I thought that they were bigger because I know that like the Atari ones and stuff, they had like a pedestal that you put the cabinet on to make them taller. But I thought those were just already taller because, I mean, children aren't going to be playing Mortal Kombat. It's a mature rated game, right?
Yeah, sure. You wouldn't let your kids play it, would you?
They wouldn't be interested.
Exactly.
I probably would let them, but they wouldn't be interested. Dude. They would be like, this is too hard.
I just remember, though, the biggest hype about any Mortal Kombat ever in my experience was Mortal Kombat 2. And this was the year that we were taking the trip up the East Coast for my high school band. We actually played at Carnegie Hall. And that was when all the beta machines were still out. All up the East Coast. So we were like, which beta is this? And everyone would have like 3 different printouts based on the beta version that we would try to figure out what we were playing.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw Mortal Kombat 2, my mind was blown. I saw it at like a bowling alley. And like, you know, I'm sure we all saw the first game and played it. But like the second one was like, somehow the graphics were even better, even though it was still that whole like digitized people thing. And it was just like, my mind was blown. Like, it's just so good. So, yeah. And then I remember seeing the third game for the first time, and I was also like, wow, this looks like really different. But I don't know, even as much as I enjoy the third game, like, it wasn't the same as 2. I don't know what it is.
2 just had, like, the magic that 1 built.
Yeah.
Because 1 is kind of hard to go back and play it because it was a very slow game.
I think 3's biggest problem was taking Sub-Zero's mask off. It just didn't feel the same.
Yeah, but 2 had all the charm and violence of 1, but it was at a more playable speed. It was a faster game.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Anyhow. Okay. Well, our mailbag segment turned into Mortal Kombat talk, but hey, that's okay. Let's move on to some more news. All right. Now, Loki, now, what does it say up there? Now, what can we talk about at this point in the show?
Fine.
I'm sure you have some choice things to say to me, right?
So Microsoft, you know, well aware that their Xbox Live service is full of the best people. So they decided that they're going to put out acceptable trash talk examples.
And what? I hadn't heard.
And what not to do when you're trash talking. So, for example, some things that you shouldn't say. Hey, profanity. That was some serious potato aim. Get wrecked, trash. Who the fuck talks like that? Nobody talks like that. At least I hope nobody
talks.
That
was a very potato reading. Get wrecked, trash.
The only reason you went positive was you spent all game camping. KYS, kid.
Okay, well, you shouldn't tell children to kill themselves. I get that. You know what KYS means, right?
Yes, I gathered that.
Yes, yes. Kiss your savior. That's what kiss your savior.
Cheap win, totally expected from a racial slur.
Racial slurs are not okay. I'm not going to make fun of that one. They do need to get rid of those.
But anyways, yeah. So they have this whole website and they actually broke it down by like different categories of like how what you should and should not do, like attitude and standards. Keep it legal.
Attitude check. Anyone?
It says anyone Xbox Live is available in all countries. For example, you know, build a club around illegal drug use. Don't do that. Create messages that encourage underage drinking. Don't do that. Tell other players to kill themselves or commit self-harm. Don't do that. Upload custom gamer pics that show animal abuse.
Why would you do that?
For example, don't spam into substance or turning spam into substance. Regularly offering prizes in exchange for follows. Let's see what stuff that we should be doing. So trash talk.
I'm sorry. I love this comment about KYS. OBS before L Uncle Joe. Sorry if I'm butchering your name. Says KYS, kiss your sister.
Sure thing. If you're a Lannister.
No, we don't talk about that show. We don't talk about the competition. Dark Sakura. It's Sunday night.
You know what? People can do both.
And then Act Deft follows up and says, "Hey everybody, TYS, treat yourself." I love that. If somebody says KYS, I just want you to think TYS, treat yourself. Here at OLR, we want you to TYS, treat yourself. I'm going to buy that Mortal Kombat 3 cabinet. Why? TYS.
Or like, here's what you shouldn't do. You suck. Get out of my country. Maybe they'll let you back when your KD's over one. Here's what you should say. Get destroyed. Can't believe you thought you were on my level. That was some serious potato aim. Get wrecked.
Oh, so I can say that was potato aim, get yes. wrecked. Potato aim?
Cheap win,
that?
Come at me when you can actually drive without running cars off the road. Hey, I take that personally. I can't keep the car on the road. And you know what? If they want me to drive off-road, they wouldn't let me drive off-road. Make stuff suitable for all audiences. For example, don't upload a custom gamer pick that contains nudity. Send lewd messages to other players.
Hey, you want to slide into my DMs? TYS.
Harmful behavior that has no place on Xbox. For example, use mods that explicitly supported or that are not explicitly supported by game developers. You wouldn't mod your game, would you? Exploit to duplicate in-game items. Don't do that. Bad people. Connect modified or tampered hardware to the Xbox Live. God, this sounds lame.
Well, okay, look.
How about I do none of those things?
We know that Xbox Live is this forever punchline about that it's just trash when you go on there and you know, use voice chat. So I understand that Microsoft is, like, under some pressure to, like, do literally anything about it. So this is that. Like, it's something. It may not be much, but I know I've learned the term potato aim. And I'm going to use that in a sentence at some point this week. That's how I play Overwatch with my potato aim. Idaho potato aim. Anyway, Mr. Smush is yelling in the other room that I have potato aim right now.
Be right back.
Anyway.
I have to go cuddle him against his will.
Bobby Black Wolf in chat says, my potato aim is so bad it's not even from Idaho. anyway.
So, like, I'm trying to understand what I'm trying to fill in their blanks here. So, get sexual threat. Can't believe you thought you were on my level. Like, get fucked. Is that, like, a sexual threat?
It's either get fucked or get what you would call if you force sex upon someone against their will. I've heard of that one being flinged around on Xbox Live. And it's not okay, just to be explicitly clear. So, anyway. Again, Microsoft has to do something. But, yeah, at the end of the day, if they're not going to ban people for being fuckheads, which I guess maybe I'm not supposed to say, but when you do say these types of things, you are, in fact, being a fuckhead. So,
what about just say get consensually fucked?
Like, well, I don't know. Because that's...
No,
Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about a company that is banning some fools. Respawn, behind Apex Legends, of course. Y'all playing some Apex Legends? Well, 770,000 of you just got banned. Congratulations. Although I would guess this is probably not 770,000 individual people. This is probably 770 trolls with 1,000 accounts or something along those lines. Anyhow... Respawn did. I was kind of looking at this going, didn't we kind of already have this? And yeah, this is a follow up because Respawn did. They said, we've still got plans to deal with cheaters. We're not going to tell you what those plans are because we don't want you circumventing it. So it has to be a little bit vague. But there was another blog post that said, the recent added in-game reporting tools had a big impact on discovering new cheats, including previously undetectable cheats that are now being found automatically via EAC. What's EAC? Is that EA's cheat control or is that an acronym for something else? EAC. It's got to be some
probably some EA thing.
Anyway, total bans are now at 770,000 players. We've blocked 300,000 account creations. We've banned 4,000 cheat seller accounts, spammers, in the last 20 days. Total matches on PC impacted by cheaters or spammers has been reduced by over half in the last month due to recent efforts. In a quote here from Drew McCoy, the executive producer, it is a constant war with the cheat makers that we will continue to fight. We take cheating in Apex Legends incredibly seriously and have a large amount of resources tackling it from a variety of angles. Saying he will be back next week with an update on another one of these issues called out in last week's post. So you better look out because Drew McCoy and the rest of the Apex team is coming for you. And stop cheating in multiplayer games. Like, if you want to cheat in a single-player game, or if you want to form your own little instance with your friends where you're all consensually cheating and all that stuff, fine. Go off. Have fun. But, like, don't inflict that stuff on strangers who just want to play the game and have a good time, all right? Calm down. So, anyway. Yeah, it's true. SG100 Matt says, trolls find a way. ActDev says, trolls gonna troll. DJ Rama S says, EAC is something called easy anti-cheat. So I'm not familiar with the term there, so... All right. Well, yeah. Don't be a jerk in Apex Legends. That's the thing to take away from this. But it is an extremely popular online game right now. Like, is it still outperforming Fortnite, or how has that all calmed down on Twitch?
I don't know.
I haven't looked at the rankings lately.
Yeah,
but,
it's probably pretty close.
It's still up there.
Until the next thing comes out.
You can't ignore how what a big game it is right now. Speaking of big games... Whether Bobby Blackwolf wants to believe it or not, there's still a big one out there on mobile, right, Dark Soccer?
Mm-hmm. There's the Pokemans.
That's right.
There is a release of actually a confirmation of information. The Pokemon Go community basically investigated into the new Late Guardians, but Niantic actually did announce that Uxie, Mesprit, and Azelf, whatever names... are all going to be available via region-specific raids through May 27th. They were random spawns. They were hard to find, but now you can get them from your raids. Asia Pacific is going to get Uxie. European Union, Middle East, Africa, India gets Mesprit. And America and Greenland get Azelf. So... there you go. They are the Late Guardians from Gen 4.
Now, I know they haven't confirmed this yet, but my assumption is that these guys are going to rotate. Because didn't the dogs from Gen 2, they did the same thing? Like, one region got, you know, one dog, another got, you know, another, and then they rotated. So, like, this should be, like, the next 3 months worth of raids, right?
Yeah.
That's my assumption, anyway. Mm. So, interesting. I have yet to catch one. You know, I as much as, you know, we tease Bobby Blackwolf, and I know he's teasing us right back when he says hashtag dead game, and we're like, no, it's not. I do notice that, like, the raid scene is kind of – it's at least around me, it's kind of slowing down because I think people are just getting a little burned out. Kind of feels like it's just, like, the same thing, and the Pokemon aren't that exciting, and there's so many events. I'm not sure what the game could do to really wake people up. I don't know if the secret is just release Gen 5. I don't know. Do you think there's something Pokemon Go could do to get people kind of, like, back interested in it again?
Make maybe, it competitive?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, they have
PvP. It's not really a competitive thing.
Well, they have PvP, but it's kind of, it's very much a sideshow. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think it's fun right now.
Yeah. Toshin in chat says, Niantic said no rotation right now. What? They really want people to trade for that stuff? Then you're going to have to really be able to trade long distance stuff. I think they're going to end up doing the rotation. Or they'll make it like quest rewards or something like that. I don't know. That's probably what's going to end up happening. We'll see. Or maybe you'll have to get real lucky and catch them in the wild, which apparently has been a thing going on. All right. Well, Loki, along the Pokemon lines.
Yeah, so they're doing this brand new app that's coming out now called Pokemon Pass, which is going to be separate from Pokemon Go, but you can actually get Pokemon, much like you did in the 3DS or the DS, at different locations. They'll unlock different things. So, like, for example, the first thing that's going to be available is on May 11th, and if you have Pokemon Let's Go with the app, it'll allow you to unlock a shiny Pikachu or shiny Eevee for Let's Go. So that's if you go to Target and use your app there.
Okay, wait. So you're going to have to scan a QR code?
I think so.
That's it? Like, you use this app to scan a QR code. And so I have to go to Target to get that QR. Gosh, there's no possible way a QR code that, correct me if I'm wrong, never changes, right, Loki? It's just going to be the same QR code on, like, a cardboard.
I don't know that.
Yeah, there's no way that, like, I don't know, somebody could take, like, a picture of that and put it on the internet.
Well,
and I could just scan my monitor.
If it's, like, a poster up on the wall, yes. If it's, an app or something, like, in the store, like a kiosk or something that generates a unique QR code for you,
okay,
then perhaps.
Then that, okay, that's going to be a little
but
harder, yeah.
Let's think about the minimal viable product here. It's going to be a fucking poster.
Yeah, it's going to be a poster.
And that'll be up on the internet immediately, and yeah.
Because that's what happened with the, what was that game that was trying to compete against Pokemon? Yo-Kai Watch. Okay, so Yo-Kai Watch had QR codes in it, right? And there was kind of like a similar thing, like the anime, I think, had QR codes in it. And you could, like, scan it in the anime. Yeah, that shit was on the internet in days, you know, hours, minutes. You know, it was just not. Yeah, I'm sure that's what's going to happen with Pokemon Pass as well. But hey, I'm all for extra things and extra perks in these games. Fun, right? Why not?
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe if they and Act Deft in chat is telling me about the last story with the Pokemon raids, they'll keep them regional since they'll still be appearing in the wild. Maybe I'll have to use a QR code to get them. Maybe that'll be the thing. Who knows? We'll see what Pokemon Pass lends itself to later. Act Deft says the QR is already on the internet. Well, that didn't take long. And maybe, you know what? Maybe this is how they plan to do the legendary distributions for the Gen 8 games for, I already forget the name, Sword and Shield and Gun. This is how they plan to distribute for Sword and Shield, is that they're going to use this app and do it instead of those GameStop cards with the codes. Who knows? Anyway. All right. One more story, I think, for you guys before we get to the listener roundtable. So if you want to call into the show, you can join our Discord, vognetwork.com/Discord. And we'll be looking for some calls in the green room. If you want to give us a shout to what you want to talk about tonight, just mention it in Channel Orange Lounge Radio. So again, vognetwork, vognetwork.com/Discord. But our last official story tonight has to do with a game that's pretty old at this point, but it was on a ton of, it was like on PC, it was on the original Wii, it was all over. It's a game called World of Goo. Well, World of Goo got a PC update this week, and that game hasn't been updated in probably 10 years. What's interesting about this update, this isn't some little like bug fix all these years later update or things like that. Actually, what's really cool about this, it changes the resolutions to now do a 16:9 display, because when the game came out, 4:3 was a little bit more of the standard. And it has an HD makeover, because the original resolution of the game only ran at 800:600. So no HD version, no remaster, just an update to World of Goo to make it better. I should point out, though, no new levels, no new challenges. They didn't really change anything in the game, but still very cool that they are updating it to support more modern PCs. So hooray for that. Hooray, polite applause for a game maker willing to go back and update their very old game. But again, I think a lot of people probably own this because they just – it was so many sales and so many things of that nature and so forth. I'm just very, very happy to see that. So all right. So anyway, oh gosh. Okay. I don't usually read these on air. I don't usually read all of these at once because it kind of derails the show a little bit, but this is a big one. And plus we're getting into the listener roundtable anyway, so it's appropriate to read it this time. But I do want to acknowledge this. We just got 3,500 biddies from, that's a lot of biddies. We just got 3,500 biddies from Schmegtastic in our chat. Saying, and I hope I said your name right. I'm sorry if I butchered it, especially after what a sweet gesture that is. Saying, this podcast was literally my adolescence and has transcended into my adulthood. Again, just extending my gratitude to you all for such a great community and podcast. So allow me to express my gratitude for you for doing that. And thank you. It's not just about the biddies. I mean, don't get me wrong. Appreciate it. But just saying that, just the fact that we've had that impact on somebody in some sort of little way just means a lot. It always kind of blows me away. Like, for one, that we've been doing this show as long as we have. And the other is just like how many people have really stuck with us for as long as, you know, and I realize people come and people go. And I know I name checked Toshin earlier in the show, who was kind of like, I think, a listener back in the like All Games days, which was a while ago at this point, right? Vog's been around since about 2012. And so All Games, when did All Games start? All Games started, I think, around 2006. Well, I'm sorry, when we joined, All Games was around before that. But you know what I mean? Our time with them started in, like, 2006. So, I mean, just to think, like, oh, my God. Like,
and they were listening on the PSP.
How many years were – really? Schmegtastic was on the PSP. I'm telling you, that PSP thing doesn't get enough credit. I would say that OLR PSP, rest in peace, because sadly it's no longer there because, I mean, why would it be? But that OLR PSP – probably brought more people to OLR than anything else in our history, save for the launch of iTunes podcasting and us being one of the original shows in it. That's probably the only thing I can think of there that really comes close. So, yeah, and there's so many folks in chat. Yeah, OLR PSP. I listen on the PSP too. Fuck, I wish we could make Lightning Strike twice. Too bad there wasn't an OLR Vita, but it wasn't really the same thing on the Vita. The PSP was different because we were really able to build something there that really felt like you were like unlocking a new ability within your PSP. You know what I mean? With the whole like listening on Shoutcast, like a lot of people didn't really know how to do that. And you made it so easy with that website and it looked really cool. And it was like built for a PSP of mine that I just think like, yeah, again, anyway, is it on like one of those like web archives or something? The OLR PSP site? It's gotta be. Like, there's gotta be a way for you guys to see it. And what it like, for those that have no idea what I'm talking about, if you're like newer to the show, because it really was for the time, it was really cool.
I'm actually trying to learn Swift so I can make an iOS app.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
For us. I'm just starting my research, so
I mean, to be fair, maybe all of Vogue Network would want an app, but yeah, you know.
You know what I mean. I had started on the idea like a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's just that they've changed so many things since then.
Yeah, you got to stay on top of that stuff or it's outdone before you even know it. So anyway, big, big thank you for that. And yeah, Bobby agrees it was worth breaking the rules for. And I'm okay with that. I really, really am.
So, I can post a link. There's a Wayback.
Oh, is there? Copy. Is it on the Wayback Machine?
Yeah.
Sweet. Post that in chat. That's awesome. I love that. Anyway, we are. I did not get the studio on the freaking Discord server. Actually, before I take calls, we do have at least one person in the green room. Did you want to do any last minute stories? I know I had to cut.
Sure, I can talk about there.
Do like one story, then we'll get to.
You may remember that we talked a little bit about the Overwatch kind of. Was it the thing that they were doing for the mods and stuff like that? So someone actually created, of course, a portal gun in there. So now you can have your portal fun along with the as a, one of the game types in Overwatch now. So that's kind of neat that they have that.
That's cool. I forgot to mention during my game of week, I actually played Overwatch, which I haven't played in a while. But I was like, oh, shit, that special event is about to run out and I haven't even done it yet. So I went in and I did like the story mode and the use any hero mode and all that. And the opening movie is kind of long this time, but it's well done. It's good. I just wish, like, there's seriously only one character in the story mode version that I can play half decently, and that's Mercy. I guess if I was forced to, I could kind of do Winston, but I am terrible with Genji and Tracer. Terrible. So, but I mean, I think it's cool.
That's okay. I'm terrible at the entire game.
It's fair. Let me answer that, since you can ask questions in chat as well, and then we'll get to a call here. Schmegtastic wants to know, is Loki still doing any game coding? Last I heard, he was messing around with C++ or something. It's been a few months since I've tuned in. Well, let me tell you. So I guess some cliff notes. The kid has written more games at this point than Loki has. The kid is doing coding, actually, which is pretty amazing. And I hope at some point he'll have a game that we want to say, hey, y'all should go check this out. He made a game about John Cena memes. It was pretty awesome.
He's kind of gotten done with doing John Cena stuff. In fact, that's actually as funny. Like,
we were already.
No, we had that conversation the other day about, like, because the owner of I always talk to the owner of the place when I'm there. And he's like, yeah, I've noticed that he's stopped putting John Cena in every single one of his games that he submits. So he's doing, like, no, he finished one now. It was called Dragon Racing. So they have the race dragon around, like, a little track thing. He has to do one now. It's called, because Ninja Invaders, it's basically he has to create a ninja character that you move and avoid, like, stuff coming towards it, kind of like a space shooter avoid object thing. So he has to work on that. So he's got about he's about halfway through the white belt course, and then he's gonna go through that. He has to do some robotic stuff, and then there's some, they call them prove yourselves, which is basically, here's a challenge, but we're not gonna tell you how to do it. You have to do it based on all of the knowledge that you have, and it's kind of like a test. And once he does that, then he moves to yellow belt, which is then JavaScript. So he's going to start getting in JavaScript.
And you guys have to remember, because if you haven't listened in a while, you might not recall, Loki's kid is 8.
Yeah.
8 years old. And this is what they're doing now. When I was 8 years old, we were plunking around on an Apple IIe doing Logo. Not the television network. The pen down, forward 30, pen up.
When I was 8 years old, I was learning French.
If I look here, I probably could post a couple of his games in chat, because I get linked on them every single time that he goes in there. They go into the parent portal, and I can show you some of the stuff he's been working on. But it's
cool.
It's not to make fun of him or anything. A lot of it's very obnoxious.
It's a kid. And I usually when we like laugh at that stuff, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe what kids are doing. I can't believe like what kids like are into. But as far as your own personal coding, he has yet to release anything that is. I did see the time to car thing. I did get to see that at one point. But
it's on YouTube.
Oh yeah, that's right. You did put it on YouTube.
It's on my YouTube channel, Loki OLR. Yeah. You can check it out. It's really old. The reason I didn't release it because it wasn't fun, and I wanted to redo the whole thing. I lost the scope of what I was trying to do with it, and then it just became too weird, and so I decided I'm not going to work on it until I have a clear idea of what I'm going to do. So I'm working on something else right now instead.
All right. Well, let's get to some calls, or at least a call, because we do have somebody waiting there in the green room that wants to be on the show, so let's bring them on. Hello, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, Ralph, this is Metal Mayhem.
Well, hello, Metal Mayhem. What's on your mind tonight? I just called you Mayhem. I called you a Mayhem. Ham? Sorry about that.
Well,
Mayhem. Mayhem.
Better than June beef, right?
All right, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, since you kind of sort of touched on it briefly in passing a short while ago, I thought I'd call about Arcade 1-Up. Now, you know, I haven't seen these machines in person myself, but obviously you and Loki and Dark Soccer have. So my question is, for a little exposition, obviously I know they're going to be a little bit different than the actual arcade originals. They're going to be smaller. Chances are they don't accept quarters or tokens or anything like that.
Yep.
But even with that being said, now, if you're not in the position to get the actual arcade machine for whatever reason, you know, would you recommend, you know, people go out and get these machines as like a alternative to the original machine?
As an alternative to the original machine, it depends. If you're a collector, I don't think anything's going to replace the original machine as far as like collector value and goes. But if you're just somebody like looking to enhance your game room or your fun space, especially like maybe if you have like a community game room, if you have like a HOA or an apartment complex or something that has like a standard game room and you're looking to like enrich that a little bit, I think one of these machines would be really like an adorable way to do that. Now, since you haven't seen them in person, but by the way, well, at least a local Walmart to here has them on display. Now, I don't think that means every Walmart has them on display, but I know one near here does. So if you have a large Walmart near you somewhere, you might be able to go and see that. So check that out. And also Costco here sells them. Now, I don't have a Costco membership, but somebody sent me a text the other day going, hey, I thought of you because I saw this at Costco. So I know they're selling them there too. Is Costco nationwide? Or is that just West Coast? I can never
remember.
They're
nationwide.
Okay, they're nationwide. So check that too. So you may be able to see one in person if you head to one of those stores. And I imagine they're going to be showing up more places soon. Because there's really no describing it like seeing one in person. Although you could probably see some YouTubes. And they probably do a good job at explaining it as well. They are smaller. They're not like the original cabinet. Because I would say imagine more like a bar top. If you've ever been to a bar and you see something that's like kind of like sitting on top of the bar, it's kind of more like that. But it's probably like I would say it has a little more height to it. It kind of goes up a little bit. It's a little more skinnier like an arcade cabinet. But it goes up a little bit. And then, you know, it's just not the size of a full size. It's meant to be put like on the bar and then you sit there on a stool and play the game that way. It's not meant to be something you put on the ground because if you put it on the ground, it wouldn't come up past your kneecaps. Okay, whereas the original arcade machine would come up the full size. The thing I noticed right off the bat as being very different is the monitor, because they have a very kind of like cheap but modern monitor in there. And I think one thing you have to remember is that a lot of these games like Mortal Kombat, like, I don't know, what are even in these things? Crystal Castles, what kind of, like old school Asteroids, Tempest, those type of games, they all played on CRT televisions. And that's not what's powering these things. These are like flat screen TVs in those. So
yeah.
That's the first thing I noticed that's different is that, oh, this looks different because it's not like a CRT, which is a very kind of distinct look to it versus, you know, a more modern flat screen television. So I think for me right there, that's like the biggest difference you're going to notice. But that's also how they make these things not cost a couple thousand dollars, which if you're a collector trying to collect a machine, I don't know. Jamie, you may know more about this than I do. I know you guys collect pinball machines and not arcade machines, but do you have any idea, like ballpark, what an 80s arcade machine might cost somebody?
Depends on the machine. I mean, really, because it depends on rarity. It depends on if it is a mod. A lot of machines were modded, and people will buy the modded machines and try to restore them back to original. When we picked up our pole position, now it was in shitty condition,
right?
But we picked up our pole position for, I want to say, 200.
That's not bad.
But
it was in that condition.
Yeah, it was pretty crappy. I remember Shermie lived in it for a little while. Remember?
Yeah, I do. I do. And you guys put a MAME thing in that, right?
We did. We did. We also, now keep in mind our gyrus was free because it needed a fuse replaced and the owner didn't want to do it. Or you didn't know how to fix it. We got our Blastroids, I want to say, for 50. I mean, we've since sold both of these now, I think, for 500 for the pair. Because we needed room. I mean, it just really depends. A good way, actually, to learn some of these prices is a channel that Dan and I watch is TNT Amusements out on the East Coast. I'm trying to remember where exactly, but But, you know, he'll go through and he'll say what the price is. You know, they show some of the repair process on some of the machines and they talk about the pricing and, you know, what a discounted price would be and what he picks up these things for and the work that goes into them. I get a really good gauge just watching his YouTube channel. So
now I do want to respond to some because I'm finally looking at chat and some of the input you guys are making there. First off, Costco is apparently not just nationwide, but it's in Mexico, too, according to ActDev. So it's international. So I really don't know what I'm talking about. And then let's see. SG100 Matt, I thought, had some good advice here. Your best bet for getting machines at a good price, look for auctions. Sometimes you'll get a good deal. I remember YYR got his DDR machine for a good price at an auction. So that's a good way to think about it too. Not that I'm saying you're running out there to collect arcade machines, Metal Mayhem, but you never know. Especially sometimes it's just about like who you know and what have you. Just like Dark Tits. I'm sorry, I'm looking for chat while I'm talking. Dark Sakura.
Do not even.
I'm looking at chat while I'm anyway. Mm-hmm. So Dark Sakura mentioned that they got a free one just because. You know, it
lazy
was taking
owner.
Up space as far as the owner was concerned.
You'd be surprised where you can find stuff. I found my DDR cabinet on Facebook Marketplace. So
yeah, wow,
I got a great deal on that.
It's crazy.
Now I did, you know, a little bit of basic research for actual arcade machines being sold in my area. For those that don't remember or relatively new to the show, I live in the Western New York area. And you know, the cities in Western New York are nowhere as big as Sacramento or L.A. or anything like that. So my choices for places that sell are rather limited. And now the ones that I constantly see being advertised that they have been restored and whatnot, typically regardless of the machine, they're being sold for roughly $2,500. That's as much as like I would like an actual same working order and all that, $2,500 is way out of my price range. So I kind of figure, all right, if I can't do $2,500, if I remember right, you said these arcade one-ups are being sold for roughly about $200, right?
Yep.
So I can't figure $200 is still a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
But $200 is still, you know,
it's
way
save
more
upable,
affordable.
It's doable, it's, you know, not much, you know, it's about the same price what a console would cost you. You know, I mean, you're only going to get a handful of games, so they have to be games that really mean something to you, but, you know, it could be worth it. So,
yeah, right. Now if I like, if I really put, go. And save up like living on nothing but ramen and air and water for like years, then maybe, just maybe, with a little luck, maybe I can possibly afford an actual arcade machine at like $2,500. But I wouldn't hold my breath on that. So
I don't think any arcade machine is worth starving yourself for. But you know, if you find things in your budget to cut back on, you'd be surprised how long it might take or how not so long it might take you to save for some things, you know what I mean?
Exactly. I mean, you know, the computer that I'm on right now, you know, that was relatively cheap, but I literally had to live on like a shoestring, you know, budget for like 3 months to get the money for that, and that was only like roughly $450, so.
Yeah. All right.
Well, anyway, you know, I took up way too much of your time, so I'll clear up the lines for someone else to, you know, call in, but thanks for taking my call.
Don't worry about it. It was a good topic. You take care, okay?
You too. Take care.
Yep. All right. So we are about to get to our next call here. Dark Tetsuya agreeing in our chat. Yeah, the one-ups might be good if you don't want to get your hands dirty with repairs. Hmm. All right. Well, we're going to take another call here. I see another person in the green room, so I'm going to bring him into the on-air channel and say hello. You're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, it's Schmigtastic.
Hey, hi there. You're the one that just sent that very kind donation. Thank you so much. How can I not take your call tonight? How are you?
Oh, it's no worries. I'm doing great. A little under the weather, but...
Yikes.
Yeah, I don't have anything relevant topic-wise to say, but just wanted to say, you know, I've been listening since I was 15, back when RSS feeds on the PSP were still a thing. I'm 28 now, so that kind of dates me a little bit there, but... I think my first memory of you all was when you were mentioning how long you all had been on the air, or a podcast rather, and Dark Soccer held up her fingers and said, "We're this many." And you were all like, "Oh yeah, great radio, Dark Soccer." They're holding up your fingers.
Isn't that ironic now that we're on Twitch? So Dark Soccer, hold up how many fingers with how old this show is. they can't see that. No, we're more than one, Dark Soccer.
Multiply that by 17.
All right. Noted. Yeah, I mean, I've called in and emailed in under several different aliases. Could never really stick to one. So this is one I actually can stick to because I've had it since I was a teenager. But yeah, I mean, I remember emailing in one day when I was a teen and real lonely, angsty teen, and how I sent in an email stating how the show really got me through the day when my dog died, stuff like that.
Yeah, you know? I remember.
So I just want to thank y'all for keeping at it, and for this long too. That's just kind of unprecedented. I mean,
I kind of joke about this sometimes, but the story that you kind of gave there is that, like, I've been listening since I was 15 and now I'm 28. You know, it's like the best thing to hear at the same time being the worst thing to hear.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of,
no, yeah, but I love it. I love it. No, I do. Like, but the fact that we just make fun of it because it's obviously a reminder of, like, oh yeah, I was 24 when I started this and now I'm not.
Don't even.
The fact that many of you have stuck with this as long as you have. I mean, it's the reason why we keep showing up on Sunday night. You know, we're not a huge show. We don't got the ratings, a giant bomb, or what are even the big gaming podcasts? I don't even know anymore. A lot of them just kind of come and go. But anyway,
neither do I, because y'all were technically Gamer the first podcast I ever listened to. So
I don't want to say anything even remotely shady about Gamertag, though, because Danny works very hard at what he does and deserves the success that he's getting, and he's another indie guy. So, like, I can't shade or hate on that in any single way. But I will always throw shade at the corporate people involved. Gosh, thank you. Thank you so much for just being here and being with us and giving us the motivation to show up. Like, people often ask us, like, how do you keep going for 17 years? And there's several different answers
Boredom.
To that. One, well, I mean, you say that tongue in cheek, but there's definitely a part of me that goes, like, the Sunday nights when OLR isn't here, when something pre-planned isn't going on, like, let's say, like, we had a show cut out because of a technical issue or something. Like, I really didn't want to take the show off, but we had, like, a technical issue or something. And it just feels weird. I'm, like, sitting there going, what do I do? I guess I'll watch Game of Thrones or something. No, I'm not even that bored. So, you know, it's like, I don't know what to do. But just also the fact that there's so many of you out there. And I say so many, and again, it's not, like, thousands and thousands. It's maybe dozens and dozens. But that's still something to me. The fact that even one person would, like, turn up and, like, give a shit about our discussions that we're having here and our stories and our angles and things like that. Like, that's just, like, that's all the motivation in the world. And that's something that's kept this show being fed for 17 years and will keep the show being fed until one day we just have to pull the plug for whatever reason, you know, whatever that reason may be that I don't want to think of yet.
Right, you know, I've dropped in and out of several different podcasts, but this has been the one that I've stuck with for 12 years now. I mean, granted, I'm never as consistent as I would like to be, but, you know, y'all have been my getting me through, you know, to my commute to work and my commute home from work. You know, just always hearing your voices is a good thing, and you guys really put on a great show, and I just wanted to extend my gratitude. So,
well, thank you so much. It's, like, super appreciated. And, you know, if you
I really do appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, if you can't listen every week, it's, like, totally okay. Like, you know, some people will say, like, oh, man, I haven't been able to listen to OLR in, like, 3 months. And, like, it's cool. Like, it really is fine. Like, don't feel like you owe me an apology. So, you know, like, I'm here doing my thing with Dark Soccer and Loki. And if you're able to make it out, cool. If not, hey, it happens. But as I usually say at the end of the show, and I'll just kind of remind everybody of it now, if OLR, you decide one day it's not really for you anymore for whatever reason, I just hope you support independent podcasts. And please, please, please do not support celebrity podcasts that want to charge you $7.99 a month for the privilege of being able to listen
I'm
going to say.
For the record, if you do decide the podcast is no longer for you, would like to know why. Honestly enough, because I'm a firm believer that a complaint is a gift. And if you have a problem with something that we do or say, it'd be better to tell us right off the bat. Hopefully, you know, where we can discuss it so that, you know, we know what people aren't liking.
But to be clear, because I have read some of those like iTunes reviews and things like that.
Those don't count.
Yeah. Things like Dark Sakura is a bitch, or
have there been more of those?
Rob, not in years, or Rob is annoying or whatever. Loki is too loud. Or you play too much Pokemon Go. Like, those things aren't going to help. You know what I mean?
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not very constructive criticism. But yeah. It's also glad to hear that Dark Soccer's still playing Animal Crossing. I'd like to think that Loki is still modding the shit out of GTA 5 or something.
Something.
I love my Animal Crossing, though. I'm so waiting for the Switch one.
Right. Well, that's really all I have to say, guys. So just keep kicking ass.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We needed the pick me up tonight, so I really appreciate that, Schmigtastic. And you take care, and you come on back anytime. You hear?
Likewise. Thanks, y'all.
All right. Just when you're 40, don't be sitting here reminding us you started listening when you were 15. We're gonna make that deal right now, okay? All right.
You have my word.
All right.
I'll be almost retired in 20 years.
Not
so.
From this shit. All right.
No, I'm gonna do this until I'm old with a cane, and we're doing this all holographic.
You're not already a hologram? All right. All right,
I'll show you hologram.
Take care, Schmigtastic. Thanks for being here.
Later.
Later. Oh, that was great. All right. I think we'll end on that note. We're going to end on a happy note tonight. Although I will ask Loki if there's any other last-minute stories he wants to
tell.
No,
I've been
tonight.
Just watching videos of this, of Dreams, that Media Molecules posting.
Little Big Planet, but PS4.
Yeah, the stuff that people are doing in like the beta test right now. This game is going to catch a lot of people off guard. It looks amazing.
I can't wait to play it, but I feel like they're not really explaining like when the game comes out. I feel like it's like this secret thing that like you have to be part of the cool kids club to know. Like when can I walk into a Target and buy the fucking game? That's what I would like to know.
I don't know, but it looks
tuned.
Awesome.
Yeah, it does look awesome. Like I'm all here for it, but like, you know, let me buy your game. That's all I'm asking.
I'm sure we'll see it at E3.
Well, maybe because
Sony's not
going
to be there. Yeah.
So I don't. They might put something.
They
can
just show this for the whole presentation
alongside it. I don't know. They might do a direct-ish style thing. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, that does bring us to the end of another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. But we want to thank you guys for being here tonight, and thank you for listening to our show. And as we were saying there on that call, if you enjoyed the show, I said if you don't enjoy the show, what to do. But if you do enjoy the show, please tell a friend. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But if the voices aren't here, we can't air them. Auto hosts on Twitch TV for VOG Network go a long way, and we super appreciate those. If you consider adding VOG Network to your auto host list, a nice 5-star review wherever you found this show, whether it be iTunes or Google Podcasts or wherever, all of those really, really go a long way, and we super appreciate it. I guess that's all we have to say on that end. So let's go around and get everybody's final thought. Dark Sakura, why don't we start with you? Your final thought tonight.
I don't think I have one. Just people need to learn that communication is very important. That's all.
And Loki, your final thought.
My final thought is I'm going to try to stream something this week because I've got a lot of opportunity to do that. So we'll see.
And my final thought tonight is I don't have a lot to say. I'm grateful we have new microphones. Hopefully we all sounded good tonight, and that was a worthy investment. And thank you all for being here. I think that last call just really summed it up perfectly. It was a very feel-good, fuzzy way to end the show tonight. Thank you guys so much for being here and being part of this, our little family here at Orange Lounge Radio, as we come up on episode 777, which I guess is a landmark of sorts, because it is that show that we joked about in the early days of OLR. We're not going to get to 777 episodes. Oops. All right. Well, have a great night, everybody. We'll see you next time here at Orange Lounge Radio. Have a great week gaming. Have fun. Don't be mean and all that stuff. Use your Microsoft-approved smack talking only. And TYS.
Yeah, you aim like a potato.
Yeah, you aim like a potato.
Your potato aim.
And TYS. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.